It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and not necessarily running on this 19th day of April 2021. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And we're going to find out how long I can talk before I can't talk anymore. Hi, I'm Robin. And it is, in fact, Moran Monday on The Horn. Again, the 19th of April 2021. I feel like I've been gone for a month. I was only gone Thursday and Friday. And I'm still not back up to speed, but after considerable begging and pleading and a little bit of groveling and whining, the boss, my nurse, Agnes, who could, well, make Nurse Ratched cry if she wanted to, gave me permission to try to get behind the microphone and do a little radio this evening. So here I am. And we'll go as far as we can. She told me, the boss did, that I am cleared for an hour's worth of filibustering. And so that's what we're going to try to do. Okay? Okay. So, first of all, let me thank you all for the many good wishes and encouraging messages that you have sent over the last 5 days, counting today. It meant the world to me. We will get into the madness that was this weekend. I'll just say at the beginning that sure as shit, yeah, hear the new speech impediment? Yeah, it's just lovely, isn't it? Sure as shit, I disappear from the airwaves and I began noticing it back when I was gone from the air and the massacre in Las Vegas took place. There's no accounting for this or explaining this, but for some reason or another, when I have to be gone for a couple of days, America starts shooting at each other. And that's what happened last week and over the weekend and I guess continues. And we'll delve into that a little bit more here in a bit. But first, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And what that means is thanks go out to our subscribers for the 19th, the 18th, the 17th, the 16th, and the 15th. And as well to a la carte contributors. So I'm just going to mention everybody at the same time. Not at the same time. That would be, I don't think that's physically possible. But thank you. Thank you very kindly to Joey and Giraffe. Thank you to Brendan. Thank you, Clayton. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you to our dear friend in the South Pacific. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you, Grace. Thank you to our dear friend Joy. Thank you to Gary and Karen. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Gary, labor man in New Mexico. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Arthur. Thank you, Steve in Georgistan. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Reinhard. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you all so very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you, Nagla. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Yuki. Thank you all so much for keeping this program on the air. And thanks again to everybody who made the oral surgery possible. I'll just give you a quick update. Went in on Thursday noon. Was home by, 4 o'clock Thursday. They did all the cutting. The doc did all the cutting. And as the anesthetic began to wear off, it was a mess. And he kindly provided me with 4, count them, 4 whole hydrocodones to get me through the worst of the pain. I took 2 of them because I was, with that few, small a number, I was terrified that the pain would come back. And so after that, and then, you know, ibuprofen along the way, and it's been nothing but ibuprofen since. I still have no feeling from my lower lip down. My jaw does not open. Apparently, they reticulated my jaw or something like a freaking anaconda. And it's a mite stiff yet. The thing that is most concerning to me right now is that about a day after, a couple of hematomi developed. You know, those are big, badass bruises. If you want to see them, they're on my Facebook page. But I wanted to update folks, so I shared what it looks like, and it wasn't pretty to begin with, and it's getting less pretty by the day. So I got hold of the office, and I talked to them, and they said, "Yeah, you better come back in. Let us make sure everything's all right." Got a mouthful of stitches, and I have not. The thing closest approximating solid food that I've had in 5 days is some of those ready to microwave Bob Evans mashed potatoes and some canned gravy just to give it some life. And I nailed it with that umami seasoning from Aldi. I couldn't have found that stuff at a better time. No. So apparently, you know, there was a bunch of internal bleeding. I'm still quite swollen, like I said, numb. But it'll get better. It can't help. And, you know, it's kind of been, Agnes has been rather frustrated with me. Because I do not take to just laying around very well. And, She does a very good impression of a person who is angry and mean, but I know it all comes from a place of love, and I appreciate it so much. But when she says, "Get your sorry ass back in that bed," you better believe you get your sorry ass back in the bed. So there's that. And going forward, we'll just see how it all works out. Like I said, I'll try to get through an hour or so tonight, maybe more. I don't know. Depends on what y'all want to do in many ways. Thank you. Thank you, labor man. Gary says, glad you're back. Hope you're healing and feeling well. I'm feeling better. A lot of the pain is dissipated, but that's also because I'm eating 800 milligrams of ibuprofen at a time like freaking M&Ms. Thank you, Lee in New York. Welcome back. So glad you're able to be here. So am I. You have no idea what happens to me when 5 o'clock comes around and I'm not back here behind the microphone. It's just, it feels like where I'm supposed to be. Yay, you're back, says Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. And Lee adds, you do not sound at all like Sylvester or Daffy Duck. And I will add, yet. The swelling is covering for a lot of that right now. But I'm sure I'm well on my way to puffer and fuckatash at some point in time. Yeah, yeah. And, of course, it being more in Monday, Robin, Chauvin in chains. Jeffrey gets us started. Yes, it was more on Monday, and I hope Robin is back, all her teeth intact. I'm happy to see at least somebody in West Virginia is getting some infrastructure, because the rest of the country is not going to get any infrastructure. Somebody down there in West Virginia needs to infrastruct Big Teeth Joe to invoke his incisive incisors and use his big mountainous mandibles to get some infrastructure going soon. We need Joe Manchin to be a munching on some Build Back Better blueprints and to be chewing the fat about some serious reconstruction that should have been started decades ago. And Jeffrey's apparently on a roll. Speaking of chewing the fat, Big Governor Jim Justice was seen trying to hold a fish up for a photo op yesterday somewhere near one of the coal-ridden waterways of West Virginia. Now! That was Cooper's Rock Lake. Also known, I think, I'm not sure if that's the same as Cheat Lake. It looked, but anyway, that's up in Mon County. And I posted the video. It's actually from March 24th. And if you want, this is comedy gold. Our pal Joy in Ann Arbor saw it last night right after I posted it. And we began going back and forth, helplessly devastated by the comic stylings of Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice. In no way, shape, form, or fashion did I mean to juggle that fish and drop it on that concrete. No. There are so many layers. There's so much comic nuance. It almost defies description. But in light of the fact that I'd been watching the Hemingway Ken Burns documentary, that terse prose style of Hemingway was ringing through my head, and trying to apply that to Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice, trying to repatriate a West Virginia golden trout into the lake. It was heavenly. It was just wonderful. The hand flap. It's all there. I mean, it had all the qualities of a Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin silent reel. And I understand, because there's no sound with it, and I understood why silent film was funny. Oh, God. The guy with the fishnet, and they run over to the rail, and the best boy aquatic in the lake. Bring out the stunt fish. So if you want to have a good laugh, go over and read the thread. Joy was just an absolute delight. As we bantered back and forth, the old man faced the fish. He tried to get it in the water. The fish was playing possum. The fish flopped. The old man flopped, too. Mm-hmm. Fortunately for the trout, Joey points out, he found a way out and flopped his way right back into the water. Yes, the big fish that got away from Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice. There was a happy ending to that fish tale because it was not a rainbow trout. It was a West Virginia golden trout, discovered and bred right here in West Virginia. Now, when Big Governor Jim Justice says in no way, shape, form, or fashion, he really means it, because this governor is way the hell out of shape, has absolutely no form or fashion sense. I don't ever want to hear this guy speak of bloated government or proper attire. Yeah, I understand that. As Derek Chauvin's trial comes to an end, I just hope the jurors will not become chauvinist and will convict this monster in the first degree. Yeah, good job, Jeffrey. The jury has the case now. I told you that the jury instructions would go on something approaching forever. And they did. the defense's closing was brutally incompetent. But again, they may not have to have been too competent. Because what they're looking at, they'd like to have an acquittal. But I think at this point in time, the defense was probably aiming for a hung jury and a mistrial. Yesterday, Joey points out, the 18th of April in 1931, the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa was, and that was 1831, the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa was officially opened, and as the legend goes, Robin Kincaid was the first student admitted to the prestigious university. Jesus, Robin, you really did some dental work to get rid of those wooden teeth. Yeah, born with a full set of teeth, just like a beaver. And Jeffrey adds, I would like to tell the Moran Monday Maggot version of the Paul Revere ride. Yesterday in 1775, Paul Revere and the Raiders romped into Lexington, Massachusetts, and they sang their number one hit, Midnight Ride, with the lyrics, one of by land, two of by sea, and three of by airplane over the trees. Yes, according to the Maggots, there were airports back in those days. Well, absolutely. This has been Joey's Journal for Moran Monday, the 19th of April, with Giraffe hoping for dominoes, hoping the dominoes will fall on Derek, and he'll be in cuffs from head to toe, doing the chauvinist shuffle off to prison for the rest of his life. Well, probably not for the rest of his life. He's facing like 20, I think, 20 max. And there's a $10 chauvinist shuffle challenge on the table. Thank you, Joey. Thank you, Giraffe. And the fundraising goal is somewhere around $600. So actually, it's $590 now. Thanks to Jeremy in Vermont. I thought I'd give a donation to help towards Big Old Jim Justice's first ever gym membership. You got to be careful about making me laugh. It hurts right smart. Yeah. Thank you, Jeremy. So, and there's a $10 challenge. So that would get us down to $570. That would be helpful. Very helpful indeed. Oh, the pearl clutching, Flavio says. Auntie Maxine went to Brooklyn Center, Minnesota this weekend and exhorted the people to not let up on the protesting, and that the only possible verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial is guilty and people should not accept any less. Oh, the pearl clutching by Chris Saliza over at CNN, that Waters was inciting people at the worst possible time, that while it was rich that the Sedition Caucus was having a baby over it, she shouldn't have done that, blah, blah, blah. I, for one, thought it was great she did that, and nobody was attacking the Capitol or killing people. Yeah, she didn't say to set up a gallows and go hang Mike Pence or anything like that. She merely encouraged the people to use their First Amendment rights, you know, while they still have them. Down in Florida, white supremacist adjacent illegitimate Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis has signed into law a bill that is one of the most expansive repressions of First Amendment freedom ever to be sent out of a legislature in this country. It gives the cops broad discretion to quash just about any kind of dissent that they declare to be improper protesting. Yeah, it's going to be nasty. Oh, back to the fish. Was that Jim Justice or Lou Zealand from The Muppet Show? Pick one. We've got our governor is a living, breathing Muppet. And West Virginia's only billionaire. Mm-hmm. He had gone out too far. You got to understand, as far as the Jim Justice fish story, the stocking of trout in this state is something approaching a religious experience. It has all the fanatical frenzy of, say, the running of the bulls in Pamplona, only with fish. And when you see the first thing that may come to mind is Monty Python's fish dance, and that's okay if it does. But in West Virginia, when the State Department of Fisheries takes its stock truck, people will follow the stock truck. And when the stock truck stops to put the trout into whatever stream they're at, honest to God, sometimes the fish don't even hit the water. They are, the fish are in the air, and so are the hooks, and just, they, really. And that was a real pretty fish that he dumped on the dock there at Cheat Lake, or at whatever, Cooper's Rock Lake. But yet, people get all worked up about it. Really worked up. And by the way, those West Virginia golden trout are some good eating. Oh, yeah. I could imagine some pan-fried with a little bit of that ramp butter. Ooh-wee. That would be righteous. Definitely righteous. And so, that's, you know, we've got a lot to cover in terms of More and Monday material. Moran or sociopath asks Steve in New York. I have a relative whose husband is a police sergeant. He also has a two or three year old daughter. Can't remember which. She had to have a liver transplant in January 2020. He refuses to receive a vaccine because he wants to know more about the long term effects. My relative has been nagging him to get it. I find his actions beyond disgusting and more proof that the type of people who law enforcement draws are not the people whom law enforcement should be drawing. No, and it gets worse, too. On top of that, doing some journalism, we found out via The Guardian over the weekend that a bunch of cops and politicians have been donating to the defense fund of Kyle Rittenhouse, the young homicidal maniac who, if one is to believe one's lying eyes, murdered two people in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and maimed another. And yeah, a bunch of cops and politicians have donated to his defense fund, you know, alongside the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and the Free Percenters, those various and sundry white supremacist, racist, fascist scum. So we know that the rot in this country, especially in law enforcement, runs deep. Kind of disturbing. Makes you wonder who among them is, I mean, anytime you see a cop, you wonder, you know, is that a fascist? Because being authoritarian types, they're gonna bend in that direction. Oh, and going alongside of that, there was a website, thedonald.win. A while back, it was getting about 1 million visits a day. And according to information on thedonald.win, there were discussions such as the best kind of zip ties to use to restrain elected officials, the most effective means of killing police officers. And so in that website that was dedicated to overturning the 2020 election, researchers at Advanced Democracy have discovered a dung heap treasure trove of seditious, treasonous intent. Thousands of messages by people using pseudonyms in the days leading up to the attack on the Capitol. The report was provided to the Washington Post. It was led by a former FBI analyst and Senate investigator named Daniel Jones. And apparently, thedonald.win was one of the primary organizational hubs for the planning of the insurrection. Over at the Washington Post, Craig Timberg wrote, "The website, The Donald, played a far more central role in the January 6th Capitol insurrection than it was previously known. There are thousands of posts with tens of thousands of comments detailing plans to travel to Washington and engage in violence against the United States Capitol," I would say against the United States. "The ultimate end goal of this violence was, on behalf of Trump, to disrupt the Congress and overturn the presidential election." Unfortunately, it's impossible to identify the users, but we at least know how earnest they were in their determination to see constitutional governance in this country destroyed. And basically, it started out at Reddit, The Donald, and then when it got vile and nasty-er, it moved into its own space. And an Army veteran by the name of Jody Williams owned the site and disbanded and dumped the site after January the 6th. There were meticulous plans there. Diagrams of the tunnel systems under the Capitol. Travel and funding resources. And methods of violence to be deployed. They talked about things like how to bring firearms into D.C. They talked about how much ammunition to carry in case it became a gun battle. They talked about the legality of carrying other weapons like stun guns and small knives, or bear spray for it, perhaps. How to use a flagpole to attack police officers, like an ancient Greek sarissa. One user wrote, "Cops don't have standing if they are laying on the ground in a pool of their own blood." And they were going to create a wall of death by pressing maggots from the back, pressing them forward into a cluster, because they figured that cops would be loath to shoot into a crowd of white people. Mm-hmm. "If they certify Biden, we storm Capitol Hill. Executions on the steps. Arrest the worst traitors. Let them try to hurt us as civilians. Their support will collapse overnight." Hmm. And so, having mentioned the Guardian's discovery of cops and other public officials donating to young Kyle Rittenhouse, well, there was a lot of pearl clutching and hand wringing over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, because out in Salt Lake City, a reporter for ABC and their affiliate there in Salt Lake City found that there was a paramedic in Salt Lake who gave money to Derek Chauvin. So the reporter, Jason Nguyen, went to the house. The guy gave $10. And he went to the house to try to talk to the guy and ask him why he did it. Well, over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and the various and the various dirtbags and scumbuckets who support right-wing fascist violence, oh, they got terribly, terribly butthurt. They did. All the reporter wanted to do was ask the guy a question. You know, what's your side of the story? Why did you choose to donate to this kid who killed two people with a semi-automatic assault rifle and maimed a third during the protests over the shooting of a young black man in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And so you get Wynn's initial post. A Utah paramedic donated to the defense fund of Kyle Rittenhouse. It was first reported in The Guardian. I tried to get the paramedic side of things. See the story tonight at 10 on ABC4 Utah. Well, enter political pundit Stephen L. Miller. If you don't like the enemy of the people label, perhaps stop acting like such. You know, journalism's not a pretty profession. Sometimes it involves asking hard questions. And if you are allying yourself with the scum that is the Proud Boys, the insurrectionist, treasonous scum, the insurrectionist, treasonous scum that is the Oath Keepers, the insurrectionist, treasonous scum that are the Free Percenters, then it's perfectly okay for a journalist to ask, why? Did you know that you were doing that? Do you still stand by what you did? But they got right... And then, of course, Green Glenwald, or Glenn Greenwald, a professional seventh-grade slap fight provocateur, said, because he's got a gig with Fox now. That's how low and scummy Glenn Greenwald has gotten. Some journalists go to war zones. Some confront security state agencies and repressive regimes. Some uncover the fraudulent schemes of Wall Street tycoons. And then some bullies abuse the profession to harass and expose private, powerless people. Dude was exercising power by donating money to a kid, a young man, who intentionally and deliberately, it would appear, allegedly, slaughtered two human beings and maimed a third. Well, that didn't faze old Glenn Greenwald. I wonder what this journalist would say if someone showed up uninvited at his door to get his side of the story and put pictures of the front of his house and posted it on Twitter for all to see. Well, did the journalist give money to an alleged murderer? Oh, wait, no. But, you know, defender of freedom, I mean, at least the right-wing variety, Glenn Greenwald. Well, yeah. Trader Tot, Nitwit Nero Jr., said, and the press wonders why they're hated. But the even better was, Kamala raised bail money for BLM and Antifa terrorists, yet you're doxing a low-paid first responder for doing the same? Nobody doxed him. Oh, no. He was a reporter covering a story in his own community. That's just journalism. But, of course, the nasty little fascists don't see it that way. Convicted felon, subsequently pardoned, Dinesh D'Souza, said, why hasn't Twitter banned this reporter for exposing a private individual to harassment at his home, a paramedic whose only offense is to make a perfectly legal $10 donation to an accused man's defense fund? Well, maybe because that defense fund was primarily funded by nasty-ass white supremacists and racists and treasonous scum. That's why. Yeah.
This is totalitarian thuggery masquerading as reporting.
No, it isn't. But they're all butthurt. Because well, they like to, you know, that's how fascist scum operates. They like to operate in the shadows. They don't want anyone to see or know what it is that they're doing. Yeah. And over the weekend, it blossomed and then died once the light of day hit it. Turned out that Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Marjorie Trader Green Cucumber and some other right-wing scum announced plans to form an Anglo-Saxon caucus in the Congress of the United States. So all this stuff goes down when I'm away from the microphone, and you know, there I was. Get your ass back in the bed, Robin. That's what she said. And there wasn't much I could do except for, you know, remark on it. Yeah, the Anglo-Saxon caucus was going to be dedicated to the preservation of uniquely Anglo-Saxon political traditions. And uniquely Anglo-Saxon culture. Mm-hmm. And of course, we all know, I presume, that Anglo-Saxon is another way of saying white folks. They were basically going to set up a Klan caucus in the Congress of the United States. Now, because we're talking about people like Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Marjorie Trader Green Cueball, well, we're talking about white supremacists and idiots. And once they got caught, they ran away from it as quickly as they possibly could. But the ahistoricity of it is just breathtakingly delightful. The Anglo-Saxons came from roughly Germany and murdered and oppressed the native Britain Celtic population. Those were the people who were there when the Romans showed up and gave some cultural tips, if you will, building a rather beautiful Roman society in Britain. But then, and it's not particularly historical, but there's a kernel of historical fact to it. Then, in 1066, at Hastings, a bastard by the name of William, Bill the Bastard, his buddies called him, came over from Normandy, Norman French, you know, meaning he was of Viking stock, or at least Norse stock, and beat the Anglo-Saxons at the Battle of Hastings, led, if I recall correctly, by the aptly named Æthelred the Unready. Yeah. And the Normans moved in and set up shop and repressed the hell out of the Anglo-Saxons. And all of the political traditions from that island stem almost entirely from Norman, not Anglo-Saxon traditions. Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Marjorie Trader Green Cueball were apparently pining for the very white bygone days of sitting in a smoke-choked wattle and daub hut, being lorded over by some hereditary chieftain, with absolute rule, no democracy, no running water, no toilets, No toilet paper.
God, they're delicious. Oh, if they weren't such awful little white supremacists, they would be much-needed comic relief. But these are the people who want to run our country and our lives. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Alma. That's a delightful comment. Ahistoricity? I know it is without history, but I've never heard that word. Thanks. My new word of the day. I love the history you give. Thank you, Alma. Thank you so much. I think it's a word, ahistoricity. I just consider myself freaking fortunate to be able to say it at this point in time. Ahistoricity. But ahistoricity, acognitive. Yeah, when you're talking about the cucumbers and the gomerts and the Trader Green, you can put A in front of anything that has anything to do with them thinking or using brains or brains. Right. As to the Jason Wynn at in Salt Lake City, Stephen, New York notes, criticism of the Salt Lake reporter. This from the network that sent Jesse got my stash of roofies. Waters goes to Chinatown and puts Chinese people on TV who don't speak English and ask them questions about the 2016 presidential election. Yeah, pretty much. And adds, with regard to the Donald.Win, oddly, this does seem to suggest some things. One, they were planning the insurrection before the rally that day. If that's the case, and Donald did not know about the planning, it would be harder to find him guilty of incitement since they were already going to do it. If he knew about the planning, then, of course, the absolute opposite is true. And they did know, and extremely wealthy people helped fund it. So it's kind of hard to say that they had no idea what was coming. Yeah. Well, good. Ahistoricity doesn't show up as a misspell, so we're winning. Thank you, Alma. H.L. Mencken on the Anglo-Saxon. Saxon. Flavio provides us. Civilization is at its lowest mark in the United States, precisely in those areas where the Anglo-Saxon still presumes to rule. He runs the whole South, and in the whole South there are not as many first-rate men as in many a single city of the mongrel North. Wherever he is still firmly in the saddle, there we look for such pathological phenomena as fundamentalism, prohibition, and Ku Kluxery, and there they flourish. It is not in the northern cities with their mixed populations that the death rate is highest and politics most corrupt and religion nearest to voodooism and every decent human aspiration suspected. It is in the areas that the recent immigrations have not penetrated, where the purest Anglo-Saxon blood in the world still flows. I could pile up evidences, but they are not necessary. That is H.L. Mencken in the Baltimore Sun, July 1923. Oh, there's a big attachment and fetishization in white supremacist organizations for all things Anglo-Saxon. The slavers of a former era loved them. Some Ivanhoe. And all of remember, chivalry, they got all worked up about King Arthur. And Arturus Rex, to the extent that he was anything other than a fable, would have been a Celtic Briton, a war chief, not an Anglo-Saxon. But, you know, the victors write the history, you know. That is, well, H.L. Mencken was a genius. Ku Kluxery, that is beautiful, says Steve in New York. And to this day, what H.L. Mencken said remains true. Take, for instance, the raft of hateful bills that are running like amoebic dysentery through the bowels of various and sundry Confederate legislatures. The anti-bill, anti-trans bills are on the desk of Governor Kay Ivey in Alabama. They've already been become law in Arkansas. And countless children are at risk. Again, as a result of these Anglo-Saxon, read, white legislatures. It is absolutely revolting. Our pal Cynthia out in out in the Bay Area with a kind and encouraging note. I hope your surgery went well and that you aren't suffering any ongoing pain from it. And sent me an article written by a young woman in Massachusetts, where civilization still holds forth, whose life was saved by puberty blockers. It's at Huffington Post. You can go and read it. Cynthia noting, "Oh, how I wish I could have had that puberty blocker when I was young. But of course, I was terrified of anyone finding out about me. Can you imagine what would have become of a transgender child way back in the 60s? At best, they probably would have given me a lobotomy." And Cynthia is not engaging in hyperbole. Who was the Kennedy daughter that Patriarch Joe Kennedy had lobotomized simply because she was exercising a bit of autonomy in her life? Mm-hmm. Over at Huffington Post, the article is by Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E, Talbot, T-A-L-B-O-T. The headline reads, "I'm trans and a puberty blocker saved my life. Here's what I want you to know." And she is currently pursuing a Bachelor of Arts degree in musical theater at Boston Conservatory. Had her mother not jumped through flaming barbed wire hoops, many of them, to get her the treatment she needed, she would not be doing that, because puberty would have come along and ruined her voice. But now she is studying to be a soprano in musical theater, and she's thriving. But places like Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas, good God, they don't want any thriving going on in their Anglo-Saxon states. Ms. Talbot writes, "These bills are misguided at best. At worst, they're an attack on transgender children and their families to fire up a base of hateful voters in advance of the 2022 elections." And if we ask why this is, it is because, specifically, there are no federal legal protections for trans people. Once upon a time, there were no federal legal protections for people of color. And that's how you got Jim Crow and Plessy versus Ferguson. And the Knight Riders and the murderers. The lynchings. But we got the Civil Rights Act. And so they had to, and so the vicious killers had to begin operating in the shadows. They moved on to women and were successful in stopping the Equal Rights Amendment. But the women's movement did not give up, did not rest, and continues the struggle to this day. And then they looked around, these Anglo-Saxons, and they cast their baleful gaze upon the gay population, who had been harassed, tormented, murdered forever. And since they were unprotected, these Anglo-Saxons went after them. They are bullies. They will not fight anything or anyone their own size. For them, the bald eagle is a perfect symbol. The official bird of the United States of America. Because a bald eagle never attacks anything its own size and would prefer that the thing that it goes after be already dead. It is not so much a predator as it is a carrion. And so they went after the gay community, and the gay community stood up and said, no. And exercised such an impressive display of power and determination, it begins with Stonewall. But when the Reagan administration, that benighted gang of punks led by old 666 himself, the B-movie actor Ronald Wilson Reagan, chose to ignore what was then known as the AIDS crisis, the call went out for greater activism, and I know we have members of our community who remember that well. And so, with astonishing speed and success, the gay community got some degree of federal protection. And we continue to fight that struggle to this day, and the battlefield is fucking bakeries. And so the trans community is out there, exposed, unprotected, and that is why the bullies are attacking them. And the most unprotected of this unprotected, marginalized population are the children. And that is why they are the targets of all this venom, all this viciousness, all this revolting, sickening, putrescent hatred. And so thank you, Cynthia, for sending that story along. Go and read.
Robin, quit telling us what to go and read.
Go and read it at HuffPost.com. I'm trans and a puberty blocker saved my life. Here's what I want you to know. By Nicole Talbot. She says, without the medical care I received and the relentless support of my mother, I would likely not be here today. You know, in the last couple of years, they have opened a gender clinic at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. And I have no doubt that people good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans would like to see that closed. In young Miss Talbot's case, she says, I transitioned socially in seventh grade, changed my name to Nicole, and began living in the world as a girl in how I dressed and how I wore my hair. I began auditioning for and landing female roles and making song choices that now reflected my true gender. But my greatest fear was the voice change that would come soon with puberty. The closer it got, the more my fear and anxiety grew about the deepened voice and other physical changes on the horizon. And her life was saved. She would probably be otherwise dead. But that's okay. That's okay with those pro-life Republicans in places like Alabama and Arkansas and Tennessee and West Virginia. God. So go and have a read. Jeremy in Vermont says, why don't bald eagles attack little Lindsey Graham? I mean, he's pretty close to their size and clearly dead from the hairline down. Okay. Yeah, that was worth the cowbell. Hey, I've managed to make it through an hour, and I'm pleased about that. We haven't gotten around to the massacres yet. Not that I was avoiding them. Let's see. Taliban Indianapolis. Looks like it may have been a hate crime because, dude made a point of killing four Sikhs. And as religions go, the Sikh religion is a lovely thing. Monotheistic, but still. People not hurting anybody. But you may recall that in the aftermath of the of September 11th, 2001, Sikhs were murdered because their religion requires them a certain kind of headgear, a turban. And they were murdered for being Muslims when they aren't. In Taliban-dianapolis, of course, we know now that the young white man's mother, or was it grandmother, called the cops, called the FBI, and said, "I think he's going to commit suicide by cop," and they came and they took his gun away from him, and then he went out and bought some more. Because freedom! Wolverines! Yeah. And so he had formerly worked at the FedEx facility in Taliban-dianapolis, and he went in and wasted eight lovely, precious lives. And he was, at the time that he pulled the trigger, a lawful gun owner. The kind of folks that the NRA proudly announced that they support. Mm-hmm. And then there was Austin. And Republicans were grunting and hooting about firearms, even as the killer in Austin went on his deadly business. Then there was a tavern in Wisconsin where a drunk got thrown out of a bar for being obnoxious and drunk, went and got a freedom protector, and slaughtered three people, wounded two. Then there was the African-American father sitting with his daughter in the drive-thru line at McDonald's when somebody pumped a few rounds into his baby girl. Police investigating whether they were trying to kill the daddy instead. The police put her in a cruiser and rushed her to the hospital, but she died en route. There was Omaha. It's been a busy week for the croupiers, the blood-soaked croupiers of the NRA who run its roulette wheel of death. Spinning and spinning and spinning. And the only postscript, the only coda to this is the knowledge, and this is what makes it so goddamn difficult to talk about these things, is the knowledge that absolutely nothing will happen. Nothing will happen. You know, because those Anglo-Saxons value lead more than lives. They value a gun more than a grandmother's ability to see her grandchildren grow up. That's who they are. And there's really no way to confront them. There's no way to shame them. You cannot shame the shameless. They will happily wallow in blood like some initiate to the old Mithras cult where you stood in the pit and they brought a bull out on top of the onto the platform over top of you with openings between the slats. And they opened the bull's throat and it bled down and you were literally washed in the blood to become a member of the cult. Well, Republicans are in church every Sunday. And they sing their hymns about being washed in the blood of the Lamb, when in fact they are drenched in the blood of children, mothers, fathers, grandmothers, grandfathers, aunts, uncles, cousins. And they seem to be just fine with that. Yeah. And people put them in office and keep them in office year in and year out. and pasty-faced, doughy old white men
say, yeah, but the Second Amendment is an unalienable right,
when they could not participate in a well-regulated militia if they had a brand new pair of New Balance sneakers and no. It's who they are. And no one will ever answer the question. Hell, it's hard enough to get anybody to even put it. You're a pro-life Republican. Why do you value lead over lives?
Well, one of these days I'll need my guns in case the jackbooted government comes and puts jackbooted jackboots on my neck next to my freedom ribbon living tattoo that says nobody, only God can judge me. That's why.
And then it turns out that they were hoarding and stockpiling these goddamn guns because the infringement upon their freedom that they feared was having an election certified and providing a certification of victory to the person who actually won the election. That's where we are. It's not just where we are, it's who we are. And so, God, the jury in the Chauvin trial has the case. The pettifogger who defended Derek Chauvin has now moved for a mistrial, claiming, Eric Nelson did, that, and this goes to the pearl clutching and hand wringing that Flavio mentioned at the beginning of the program, claiming, Eric Nelson, that Congresswoman Maxine Waters threatened violence if the jury does not convict Derek Chauvin. Maxine Waters did no such thing. Fortunately, the judge was having none of it. Here is the audio thereof.
I have felt that this jury should have been sequestered from the very beginning.
Understood.
To make that clear. And so I had moved based on that, this again, for a mistrial. The idea is that it is a public trial. I think the court has accomplished that, but the media attention is so profound. It is such a, it's such a modern problem to have, where literally I walk from this courtroom into the courtroom where I've been permitted to stay. During the course of this trial, I've received literally thousands and thousands and thousands of emails. So much so that I don't even look at that particular email anymore. So, but my phone gives me alerts on things that just happened. I mean, you can't avoid it. And it is so pervasive that I just don't know how this jury, it can really be said to be that they are free from the taint of this. And now that we have U.S. representatives, threatening acts of violence in relation to this specific case, it's mind-boggling to me, Jeff.
Well, I'll give you that Congresswoman Waters may have given you something on appeal that may result in this whole trial being overturned, but what's the state's position?
The state's position, first and foremost, and this is a concern I raised at the beginning of the proceedings, you know, well into jury selection, is that we can't allow statements like this, vague statements, to be considered a part of the record. on appeal. If there's a specific statement that a specific U.S. representative made, then there needs to be some sort of formal offer of proof with the exact quotes of the exact statement or some kind of a declaration. And I'm sure Mr. Nelson can do that if he thinks that that's something that's appropriate. I don't know that this particular representative made a specified threat of violence. I don't know what the context of the statement is. I also don't know what television shows Mr. Nelson is referring to in terms of any of this. And so I just don't think that we can muddy the record with vague allegations as to things that have happened without, you know, very specific evidence that's being offered before the court. As a practical matter, through the jury selection process, the court has provided instructions, has determined whether or not there are any outside influences. The law presumes that the jury follows the judge's instructions, and the court has instructed the jury today that they're not to let any outside influences or public opinion sway their deliberation. And the law presumes that they would be capable of doing it. And so without any sort of specific offer of proof or information in the record, without any specific evidence that this particular jury was influenced in any particular way, I believe that the defendant's motion should be denied.
And Your Honor, I make my comments, I mean, in the context of this is all such an evolving situation. Obviously, I spend my weekend preparing for closing remarks, and I certainly can supplement the record with news articles. I can supplement the record with, you know, the storylines of the particular shows that were brought to my attention. So I'm making it to note the record at this particular point, and I can certainly supplement.
Yeah, you can supplement the record with whatever media reports. I'm aware of the media reports. I'm aware that Congresswoman Waters was talking specifically about this trial and about the unacceptability of anything less than a murder conviction and talk about being confrontational, but you can submit the press articles about that. This goes back to what I've been saying from the beginning. I wish elected officials would stop talking about this case, especially in a manner that is disrespectful to the rule of law and to the judicial branch and our function. I think if they want to give their opinions, they should do so in a respectful and in a manner that is consistent with their oath to the Constitution, to respect a co-equal branch of government. Their failure to do so, I think, is abhorrent, but I don't think it has prejudiced us with additional material that would prejudice this jury. They have been told not to watch the news. I trust they are following those instructions and that there is not in any way a prejudice to the defendant beyond the articles that we're talking specifically about the facts of this case. A congresswoman's opinion really doesn't matter a whole lot. Anyway, so motion for mistrial is denied.
So much for that. And of course, the fact remains that the, I'd say the longer they're out, the more likely a mistrial or an outright acquittal. If they go in, order a pizza, have pizza, and come back out, conviction. And I don't know how any juror could vote to acquit this monster. There is a line that a lot of lawyers I know or knew used in their closing arguments. By the way, Mr. Nelson there, the pettifogger for Derek Chauvin, said he spent the weekend preparing for his closing remarks. You know, I'm guessing that the rules aren't that much different in Minnesota than anywhere else. But a lot of times, journalists get elements of trial and practice wrong. You will hear references by journalists to opening arguments. There are no opening arguments. There are no arguments upon the opening. In a trial, a lawyer makes an opening statement. And it's called an opening statement because it is supposed to be a recitation of facts that the lawyer will bring to proof. At the end of the trial, you get closing arguments. Opening statement, closing arguments. Because the difference between an opening and a closing is that the facts have been presented as each side understands them. And then the closing argument is a synthesis of what has been produced before the jury. The lawyer argues what the meaning and the import of those facts are. Meanwhile, you got this dude defending, and my God, did he not? This is the best, the cop union, this is the best they could do? Anyway, he tells the judge he spent the weekend preparing his closing remarks like it's his day at the Toastmasters Club remarks. So that's not on the journalists. Closing remarks. And in closing, I would merely like to remark the fact that I find the aesthetics of this courtroom to be absolutely wonderful, and I do so appreciate. Those are remarks. Jesus. Pathetic. But you'll have that. So we're still, and I'm going to go a little further. We are still awaiting a match to Joey and Giraffe's challenge to get us down to $570. Ah, here's the Nick ups. Great, perfect timing. And we're, you know, $590, looking to get to $570. It'd be great if we could wipe out a little bit of the overage. And again, sorry about the hiccups. But somebody's on the line over on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Monday to you, Robin. Long time no hear from, man.
Yeah, it's been a while. What's up, Reggie?
I'm glad you brought up Maxine Waters because they're on her ass again. But what you just said, or recently stated earlier, Robin, I mean, you know, they're on her ass again. And that bitch, Marjorie Taylor Greene, wants her fired.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I saw that earlier. Of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene is crazier in the head than the hog is in the ass, but, you know.
Yeah, they want this woman's head on a silver platter under glass on display somewhere. With a sign that says, don't fuck with us, or this will happen to you. I'm talking about Maxine Waters, you know.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I'm saying, Robin?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do. They hate her because she doesn't take their shit.
Neither does AOC, right?
Right. And she gives as good as she gets.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, you have, we have Fox News Weekend, Fox News Bot, Little Miss Janine Slobberly Drunk Hero, saying that you get immigrants from the New Mexican border, you know, children are lower than human, I guess.
Yeah.
And Joy Behar got on her ass. And Joy Behar went after her ass. She said she needs to know her. I think they were friends at one point in time. I'm not so sure. I don't know. Looking what George said, what the fuck wrong with you, Janine? How the fuck did you say that? They used to be friends, I guess. They used to know each other, possibly admire each other. And Janine went on her rant on Fox News Weekend and said, don't ever accuse me of trying to help out these kids. She didn't sit on her ass on television and did nothing for over 30 years. As a judge, she prosecuted they prosecuted the people who used these kids as drug cartels, you know, hiding drugs in them, smuggling drugs in this country. She prosecuted the guy, the criminals that did that and helped these kids out over 30 years ago. And she was a judge. And she told Joy Behar to get off her big fat ass and off her comedic stage or platform and go out and visit hospitals or prisons or New Mexican borders or something like that. What say you, Robin?
Well, I mean, they
have to say about that.
As far as Maxine Waters is concerned, Reggie, she drives him crazy because.
Yes.
She speaks to the most deep and abiding white supremacist fears. She is a black woman who will not be silenced.
Right.
You know, all she said was, we've got to stay on the street and we've got to get more active. We got to get more confrontational. We got to make sure that they know we mean business.
Yes.
There's no call for violence in there. None whatsoever.
How come why did they take that out of context?
Well,
why exactly did they take that out of context? And they're on her ass again about, you know. Go ahead, Robert.
No. They can't.
Why didn't?
Look, Reggie, yeah. I'm a little slow here today, but the bottom line is, none of these right wing thugs can. Mm-hmm. Compete on a level playing field. Their ideas are shit.
Mm-hmm.
They're
shitty. Go ahead.
Their philosophies are garbage.
Right.
That's why they have to gerrymander. That's why they have to gerrymander districts in order to even get people into office.
Right.
And when people point out those facts, and Maxine Waters is good at it.
Yeah.
They hate it. And they hate it.
Right.
They hate it when she speaks up. I mean, my God, she told a white man to shut his mouth.
How did he take that and respond to that? I'm sure he didn't like that.
Well, she's got the right to say that.
Yeah, but he's going to take it personally. Just like he did with Dr. Fauci, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's how that whole thing came about, was in the course of Jim Shorts Jordan behaving in a manner that ill befitted a member of Congress against a witness. There is a certain level of decorum, and these privileged white assholes think that the rules don't apply to them. And so when she speaks up and speaks out,
this is
the ancient toxic revulsion for, you know the word, Reggie, uppityness.
Yeah. Uppity N word.
Well, I'm not going to say it, and you're not going to say it, but I'm pretty sure people like Jim Shorts Jordan think it, and I'm pretty damn sure that if you gave a little sodium pentothal or maybe acid to, not saying anybody should, to Marjorie Taylor Greene cucumber, it'd be that word for the rest of the trip.
Right, and they want her fired because of what they thought she said on the video.
Well, that goes to show you a little bit more about just exactly. How butt ignorant these right wing jackasses are.
Right. I wanted to Jim Shorts Jordan going to his office and pile up the bits he is when he said that to him. You know.
Yeah.
But there's stuff on the outside, but there's sweet on the inside, Robin. Is that true, or am I saying that?
No, there's
stuff on the. What?
Well, you know, to use the religious imagery, these right-wingers are what Jesus called a whited sepulcher, beautiful and pure on the outside and filled with death and corruption within.
Right. Right. Yeah, right. And the Biden administration, they have to stop with these jabs, man. You know.
Yeah.
Now they don't deal Biden for wearing fishnets.
Which they weren't, by the way. Which they were. They were just patterned hose. They were not fishnets. But
yeah, but
you know, a party that coddles sexual abusers and sexual predators, they're going to try to sexualize anything that they can, especially where it relates to a woman.
Yeah, we'll get ready for her to show up in a bikini, like you know who did. You know who I'm talking about.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, you get ready for that. I mean, she would if he was crazy enough, but to piss him off, he probably would do that. But she's 70 years old. Melania did it. Nobody said shit. Well, they looked.
Reggie, melanoma wore a lot less than a damn bikini. I mean,
she wore practically nothing.
Nothing is what she wore in some of those pictures. There's one that looks like she's got a fucking tail. I mean, it's just weird.
She practically wore nothing or next to nothing.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the story about them wanting Nancy Pelosi fired. I can't find it right off the top, but
right,
it's there. Oh, there it is. She wants to expel. Yeah, here it is. Let us revel in the treasonous stupidity of Marjorie Traitor Green Cucumber.
Right.
She went after Maxine Waters.
Yeah.
And said that she's going to have her expelled from Congress.
Yeah.
And let's see. I got the audio here. Let's share this. Stand by, Reggie.
These Democrats kicked me off of my committees, and then also these Democrats introduced a resolution to expel me, and I have done absolutely nothing wrong. Well, you know what? Maxine Waters has.
Except for supporting the attack on the Capitol, except for talking about Jewish space lasers. Well, there you go.
And she's been doing it for too long, going all the way back to 1992, out there inciting violence, inciting riots, inciting people to cause damage, hurt other innocent people, and cause chaos and break laws and just destroy our country. Maxine Waters is guilty of that, so she should be expelled, and so should Nancy Pelosi for backing her up. That is ridiculous. What? And then we're going to impeach Biden, and we need to fire Fauci. These Democrats...
Yeah. Boy, she's got an ambitious agenda.
Yeah. Was she on meth or crack cocaine when she said that?
Yeah, sometimes all you need is just plain old garden variety stupidity, Reggie. That's all.
Yeah, what the fuck was she talking about? What exactly the fuck was she talking about, Robbie?
Across
the fucking line.
No, she's just making shit up, because if she was called upon, and God knows, she'll put that out there in a tweet, but she couldn't go toe to toe with Maxine Waters on her best damn day. And on Auntie Maxine's worst.
Yeah,
she won't confront her directly, because she will get chewed up and spat right the hell out.
Or her ass kicked, right?
I don't think Auntie Maxine is prone to engaging in physical violence, but
verbally.
Yeah. She'd hand her ass.
Yeah, just like AOC would. Just like AOC would. And why is she bringing Nancy Pelosi into this? What does she have to do with this?
Well, she says that Nancy Pelosi empowers Maxine Waters.
Oh, gee, that's... I didn't know that. Go ahead.
But you have to take something else into consideration, Reggie. And that is, this is all red meat for the morons. This is red meat for the maggot base. She puts this video out, and she'll check her donations tomorrow, and lo and behold, she'll have $500,000 in her war chest.
I thought she was kicked out of Congress.
No. She was taken off of her committees because of her exhortations to violence. I didn't do nothing, and they kicked me off my committees. She did plenty, Reggie.
Yeah, she did. She should be the one that did. If anybody should be, shall we say, expelled.
Well, and there are motions to expel her.
Yeah.
But by the same token, we're talking about Reggie, we're talking about politics. So understand that as odious as we find freaks like Marjorie Trader Green Q-Ball and Lauren Bobblehead Boebert, Clanny Oakley, and Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Mo Brooks Les Brames, in a way, it's kind of good to have them there because, well, we can ride their backs every bit as well as they ride ours.
Right. Don't forget you mean slobberly, stammering drunk hero. Please, add her to that list.
Yeah, but I'm talking in particular about members of Congress.
Oh, that's right. Well, we'll add Nikki Know-Nothing Haley to that list, Robin.
Oh, sure. Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
Yeah. So remember, she tried to go up AOC once, and she handed her ass. Verbally,
I mean, it's kind of fun the way watching wrestling is fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. It is fun. And why are you trying to sabotage the Biden administration? You know.
Well, because political power is more important than, you know, it's party over country always.
Oh, Jesus! Man. Remember what the late JFK said about that.
Republicans don't do that, Reggie. They ask what their country can do for them, and everybody else can fuck off.
Right. You think they're rolling over in their graves, both him and his brother? Are they rolling over in their graves?
No, they knew exactly. Jack and Bobby knew exactly what this country was.
Right.
And right. You know, when John Kennedy finally got around to confronting, remember he's the one who said, you know, early on he was all authoritarian, and the presidency changes the man, even if the president doesn't get to live out his entire term.
Right.
And he turned towards civil rights because the white supremacists showed him in no uncertain terms that they were not going to negotiate. It was their way or the highway.
Right. And what about LBJ? I wonder if he's turning over his grave.
It would be sickening to the lot of them, I suspect. Reggie, it's good to hear from you. Right. I'm gonna make a little more space, make some space in case anybody else wants to jump in. I'm not gonna be here. I don't think I'm gonna do the whole 3 hours. But it's awfully good talking to you, and it's awfully good to be back.
Okay, Robin. I didn't know that Nancy Pelosi empowered Maxine Waters by giving her superpowers.
Well, you know, that's only because she doesn't, but, you know.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And we got to protect our Democrats from these Republicans.
We've got to protect our...
talked about this on the View today. Go ahead, Bob.
We've got to protect... Thank you for that, by the way, Reggie.
Go ahead.
We've got to protect the majority because it's getting slimmer and slimmer and slimmer.
Yeah. Before we ourselves become virtually non-existent.
Well, we simply cannot allow the Republicans to get back into power.
The White House. Right.
No, that we can't let them have the Congress.
Right.
They have to be kept out, or we're screwed.
Look what happened to the White House. I'll start with Nixon, Reagan, George W. Bush, and of course Donald J. Trump. What say you, Robin?
Well, the only hope this country has of moving forward is to keep Republicans from exercising power, because they're already exercising power in far too many states, and look at the damage they do.
A whole lot.
Their only agenda is to hurt people. They are the sadism party, Reggie. They are the sadism party.
It's headed by Mitch McConnell, the turtle.
Kevin McCarthy, the lot of, and you know, I got a media advisory from 45president.com or whatever the fuck it is, telling me that COVID Caligula is going to be on Hannity tonight. Who fucking cares? But
I don't want to talk anyway.
No, but the thing is, it
yeah.
They don't go quietly. They don't settle down. They don't accept defeat. And that's just how it goes.
They don't vanish into the night.
No. Right? Reggie, you take care of yourself. Right. Enjoy the spring weather.
Yeah, you do too, Robin. And I hope it doesn't get too hot for you down there.
We're a far cry from any of that yet. I don't even know if we're going to see. I don't even know if we're going to see 75 degrees this week. Spring's kind of fits and starts here.
Well, in 2 months it'll be summer. How's the pollen count down there where you at?
Oh, I've been sneezing my fool head off, and lately the sneezing is kind of painful. Reggie, take care of yourself. You hear? We'll talk soon.
Okay, Bob. I mean, Robin, and take some medication for your sneezing, for your pollen allergies, I guess.
All right, will do. Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Reggie calling from Decatur. Let's run over and check in on the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, it's Carl from Western Mass.
I thought so. Hey, Carl, how you doing?
How's it going? For your why don't you try about a tablespoon of honey a day? That does me.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, especially if you can get it locally sourced.
Yes, local honey. Somebody mom and pop around the corner. But Dylan Roof, or you know, the little punk there, the 19-year-old punk that looks like he's like 12.
Oh, you talking about Kyle Rittenhouse? Kyle Rittenhouse? Are you talking about the little homicidal maniac?
The little boy. That's out on the lamb. Yeah, since they have all this, all these people donating money to him, it wouldn't be me because I wouldn't want to be chased down or anything. But maybe somebody could put up a GoFundMe site for a reward for his, because he's out on bail. He ditched bail. You know, maybe a GoFundMe site. You know, after about $10,000 or $20,000, some of the people that are shacking him up might start looking at him as a dollar sign. You know, kind of like like the Bugs Bunny cartoons where they start looking at other cartoon characters as pieces of meat or ham or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. The court knows where he is, and they won't tell the prosecutor, which is just unheard of.
Yes, but if somebody does a GoFundMe site and everybody pitches, you know, a bunch of people pitching $10 or $20 here or there, somebody will tell somebody who's keeping him safe will tell the prosecutor where he is, and this kid will just be shitting his pants.
Well, I think that would probably violate GoFundMe's terms of service.
Okay, that could be.
Because it's kind of like a bounty.
Yes, and the kid should have fucking bounty on his head. He really should. For the one person that should have a bounty is that little punk. I don't know if you agree with me, but I really think that kid should have a bounty on his head.
I just want to make sure he's tried as an adult, and I want to see him convicted.
Oh, me too. Run away.
I am as nervous as a wax cat in hell at the idea that it only takes one juror to fuck up a deliberation.
Yes.
Because in the Chauvin trial, it's going to have to be a unanimous verdict.
Yeah.
And yeah, that means and that means they're going to be arguing amongst each other. I mean, I've never served on a jury, but they are funny things.
Yes.
And they can make decisions for the damnedest reasons.
And he might get off and go work at some podunk town in Texas somewhere. Might be able to get a job down there. Or Mississippi Stan or somewhere like that.
Well, the, and then
one
the
person who ain't gonna get off.
Yeah, he just needs to. He just needs to. He just needs to not. He needs to not be in public.
Yes, one person that's not gonna get off is that sergeant first class that last Monday, the cost physically assaulted that young guy walking on his sidewalk. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I did. And I don't know, you know, how.
South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's losing his job. That guy's losing his job. He's losing his pension. You know, I would think at 40, I think he was 42 years old. I would think that he's got close to 20 years in. And regardless, once the military gets done with him, he is not going to have his pension. All those years are going to be for nothing. And I hope the military, I hope the civilians prosecute and the UCMJ gets a hold of him and prosecutes him and he gets a dishonorable discharge and no pension, no nothing, and just so at least he won't be able to get a job in law enforcement. Because that's one person that doesn't need to be.
Well, you know, one thing that I found interesting in the last few days, and I couldn't say much about it because, you know, I was away from the mic, being pretty much nonverbal. But did you catch the thing?
You're not nonverbal. You sound really good.
Well, thank you. It's taken a lot to get here. Because I mean, we talked on the back porch last Friday, and it wasn't real bad, but it also I couldn't go very long. I'm kind of surprised I've lasted as long as I have this evening, but. One of the things that I found interesting, and there was some ballyhooing about it, I caught it on my Filthy Morning Habit. They actually showed the clip of Pat Robertson saying, "I really don't think we've got the quality of people in policing that we need, and these people aren't very good and aren't very smart." That was a big deal.
Yes, I heard that one.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of a jaw dropper, wasn't it?
Yes, Pat Robertson, I can't stand him.
But it was surprising, was it not, to hear that emerging from his mouth?
He's the only reason why I believe there might be a God, because only a good guy young, that's why he's like 98.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. But here's the thing. I heard that clip, and I was like, well, son of a gun, how about that? But then the light went on. How many cases of police brutality... How many cases of murder? How many, you know, have gone by? The killing of Eric Garner, the killing of Tamir Rice.
Rice was the one that did it for me.
And he's been silent.
Yes.
Okay. So follow me here. Work with me. It struck me as odd that the thing that pushed him over the line was a female cop screwing up.
Yes, you get a point there.
I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I see what you're saying. I didn't realize that one.
You know, all those other excesses, yeah. Philando Castile. But this female cop fucks up, and she obviously fucked up.
Yeah. I don't think she meant to do it, but she fucked up.
Yeah, and she needs you know, there needs to be accountability for it. There needs to be prison time.
Yep.
But suddenly a woman cop fucks up, and Pat Robertson's on the air saying, "Oh, you know, we got bad cops who aren't very smart." Wasn't very difficult for me to draw the line there.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that one.
Well, I mean, you know, like, roll it around a little bit, see if it rings true.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that one. It's the first time Pat Robertson. He's
yeah, I know.
He's one that needs to just. Go away.
Yeah, well, but then, Carl, what would we do for clips of where would we go for clips of people talking about consignment store sweaters being possessed by the devil?
He dead, Jim.
Oh, by the way, nobody's asked yet, but I was gone for a couple of evenings, and I just need to remind people, Carl, that Rush Limbaugh is still dead.
Yeah, he hasn't quit smoking longer than you, though.
That's true, but he is he's finally clean and sober for how many weeks now?
I talked to him once.
Really?
I didn't get on the air, but I was laid off. And it was one winter that I was laid off. I was trying to get live tickets to Ted Nugent, but I was trying to get tickets for meet and greet in Springfield. And I didn't get on the local rock station, classic rock station here, and I didn't get them. They had like 10 tickets, and I didn't get one. I was gonna wear my Desert Storm uniform, my chocolate chip, what they call a chocolate chip Desert Storm uniform with my combat patch on and everything else, and just ask him why he shit his pants to get out of Vietnam. I had it all planned, but I was on the phone all the time. But the same time, I would call his show, because this is way after he went deaf, because I heard somebody call him up and say, you know, because he's a real, he used to be an audiophile. You know what an audiophile
Yeah.
And he loved orchestra music and operas, things like that. And I got on, it didn't go on the air, but I said, you know, it's Rush, blah, blah, blah. Did you hear the new remaster, blah, 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 blah. Because my parents I used to get brought by my parents to symphonies all the time, and ballets, stuff like that. And I asked him, you know, you should know that I can't hear that blah. I have the cochlear implants. I'm like, and I started laughing, and he hung up, and he goes, you fucking, and he called, not fucking, he said, you worthless or something. Liberal, he hung up on me. It didn't make it on air, but at least I put the little knife in. You know what I mean? I did not go on air. I guess they just did it out. They went right to commercial. But at least I got my little stab in, you know, from
absolutely. The
so, and but I heard one guy get on the air, like the guy a couple years before, 2 or 3 years before, or something like that. This guy got on, well, you know, I know you listen to, I can't hear since my cochlear implants. I don't, is that the same? You don't hear things the same, and you don't. But at least he got a little stab in.
Yeah, no, too bad he drove himself deaf with opioids.
Yes, yes. But you got to get the little victories in.
Take them where you can get them. Right. You doing all right otherwise, Carl?
Yes. Yeah, I'm doing all right. Had a snowstorm up here Friday.
Of course. But, you know,
not bad where I live, but I'm working up in New Hampshire and got there and snowed all day, wet, heavy stuff. And they were still, they still wanted to pour concrete right off the side of a road, right on the main route too.
That doesn't work real good in a snowstorm, does it?
No, it's not that it doesn't work in the snowstorm. Concrete you can pour anytime. But it's when you take up one half of the road and you have all this traffic, you know, cutting traffic off, you know, okay, now you can go, now you can't, now you can, now you can't. And it's slippery as hell because it's packed on the road. And it's just, the 3 hours I was there, I'm going, why are we here? Why did they call us up last night and say, no, we're going to do this Monday or Saturday? It was just the whole morning was like,
yeah, oops.
They got all, yeah, it was just, you know, it wasn't, they knew it was coming. Some people other than me look at the weather. But it's New Hampshire, so New Hampshire's like kind of backwards as hell.
Yeah, live free your doofus.
Yes. It's, you know, every time I hear the live free or die, it's like, no, I don't want to live in New Hampshire. Well, why not? Because if you don't live free, they kill you.
It's a hell of a, that's the ultimate freedom.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, they're screwed up there. They're right to work state. We're not.
They're the Alabama of New England.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, yes, sir. Vermont's like that, too, a little bit. Not too much. But
okay, you're going to get a fight. You'll get a fight Vermont's out of Jeremy over that.
Vermont's actually more free than New Hampshire. They really are. Those people there, they're a little bit different. But all right, I'll let you go.
All right, Carl, good to hear from you, my friend. Take care of yourself.
Your speech is all right. You sound awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye now. Our buddy Carl calling from Massachusetts. And let's see. Let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello there.
Hey, what's up?
This is not much. Just on an R.
Yes, indeed. I know. You are now Lamar the Magnificent. Okay, you got to remember that.
I got to write that down because you know at my age I don't remember shit well. I try not to. That's why we write shit down, right?
Right.
I was going to mess up people's dinner and somebody's time zone, but I decided not to do so.
Mighty good of you.
So I'm looking at the gentleman ahead of me. He had me kind of giggling because when he said that you stopped smoking and Russ didn't stop smoking, he was totally correct. Russ is in hell, so he won't be smoking for a long ass time.
Maybe even smoldering.
Whichever one, there are remnants of smoke leaving his ass somewhere. Okay, but you know, I was getting back to the trial and the other people who were talking in. Okay, I'm going to say this. I'm going to sound like a broken record. I am a black man. I can only talk about, like I tell people, you should only talk about stuff you know or what you have lived. Now, what Maxine Waters said is the same stuff that was being said in 1961. Okay?
Yeah.
Unrest, same thing that Martin Luther King says. We're going to have civil disobedience. And that's what she was talking about. But this is the part I get a kick out of. Nobody wants to teach history. Nobody wants to talk about history. Now, every riot that I have lived through was behind one thing and one thing only, police brutality. The Watts riot, police brutality. Rodney King, police brutality. You name it, it's always a policeman behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
And Chicago, 1968, the federal government even went so far as to find that it was a cop riot. The cops were the ones who rioted.
Same thing with the LBG group up in San Francisco. What's that famous riot they had? Stonewood or Stonewall?
No, Stonewall was in New York.
Okay, regardless, it was the same thing. Police kept harassing those people.
Yep.
Bottom line. So I'm up here sitting there looking at, I've already said that if they find him not guilty or acquit him, there's going to be civil unrest. But the one thing that I'm holding out for that nobody's talking about, we have a new president. We have a new AG. And both of them come from the civil rights era. Garland's basic theory is civil rights. So guess what? Let them acquit him. Fine, acquit him. I know they're going to get him for violating Mr. Floyd's civil rights because he was raped. Okay, I'm just going to say that he was raped on camera. And like I said, anybody who wants to sit and believe that that man or that officer did what he was supposed to do, I'm like this. You do not sit on a person who is dead for 3 minutes. You don't do that. And secondly, in his own police code of honor, whatever they're supposed to have, rules of engagement, once you arrest somebody, that is your responsibility to keep him alive.
You have,
not have any.
Once you take someone's liberty, the duty devolves upon you to see to that person's well-being.
Correct. So even if he didn't believe Mr. Floyd couldn't breathe, it was his responsibility to put him in a position to where he could breathe. The man was handcuffed. All he could do is kick. Now, if they were doing their job, they would have put zip ties on his ankles and rolled him over on his back. If he was scared of getting in that small-ass car, why didn't they call a van to pick his ass up?
Yeah,
they made the decision to kill him there.
It was a lynch. It was a cop lynching.
Yes, and it was caught on TV. Like they say, a good Boy Scout only does shit when you can see him. If he's not in sight, you don't do no good deeds.
Sad but damn well true, Lamar.
See, and what I look at is, you know, America has this microwave mentality. And by me being born in the 50s, late 50s, I'm a tail end baby boomer. Nothing comes fast. All you can do is hope you are alive when it happens. People are sitting here running around here screaming and hollering. Negroes were freed in 1865. Why did it take till 1965 for us to give paper rights? That's 100 years. It took almost 100 years for women.
Because white supremacy, I mean, you know the answer better than I do, but
yeah,
because white supremacy was the official policy of the United States government from its founding until 1965.
But yes, but see, I look at it like this. If we were teaching education like we should and history like we should, most people would understand the history of America and they would not be looking for instant gratification. Because see, to me, the worst thing that ever happens when they introduce Tang to the American people, instant orange juice. But right after that, you got McDonald's, microwave, and your food waiting for you when you walk in.
Instant gratification.
Yeah. That instant gratification is the death of us all right now. Nobody can wait for a damn boiled egg to boil. You got to microwave the damn thing.
Well, hell, they sell boiled. Kind of blew my mind when those started showing up in stores. My peeled boiled eggs right there in the refrigerator case.
Oh, but
for your boiled egg fan on the fly.
Yeah, buddy. Wherever you want, somebody can make it instantly for you. But it's just, to me, like I sent you that email earlier. I know what poor Mr. Nelson wanted to tell the judge. Hey, I got nothing. But he couldn't do that. So he had to go up there and talk all that shit for 2 hours. Like, you talk about filibusters. That motherfucker was doing his job. He was filibustering like there was no tomorrow.
He was pounding, you know, if you got the facts, you pound on the facts. If you got the law, you pound on the law. If you ain't got neither one, you pound on the table. And that was just table pounding.
No, he didn't even have the table. He was just stomping his feet like Curly and running around in circles. That's the way I saw him. But, you know, it's America, like you said. America is going through a whole lot of changes. We're going through cycles again. But we have a new generation like Margie Green. I'm like this. If we could find out what the hell she's drinking and smoking and marketed that stuff, we'd be rich. I mean, that heifer is, she's not in love.
Oh, Lamar, that's just bottled in bond 200 proof stupid. That's all that is.
Well, man, like I said, since we can't fix stupid, we might as well sell it. Let's be entrepreneurs. Let's be a capitalist.
It's a buyer's market on stupid right now, I'm afraid, Lamar.
Oh shit! Maybe we need to open to get some stocks on that.
If you want to apply principles of supply and demand to stupidity in the United States of America, my God. supply far outstrips demand.
Like they say, we're the richest country in the world, and stupid is not exempt.
No, it's not exempt. You will never go broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. I don't know who said that, but it's true.
Well, I forgot who said that too, because I came out in the 60s. And you know, you were sitting there talking about Kennedy. He knew they both knew what was going on. Like you said, they both knew what was going on. Because nobody talks about it. You know, because you live in the area. Your state, the Appalachians, was the first place he went and started doing social work at. And, I mean, that just blew my mind because I realized what he was doing. If he helped the poor, rich, white people, knowing that America's government cannot discriminate, if he wanted to get health care to the colored people, he'd give it to these people. Because if they take it, hey, you got to give it to everybody. I mean, there's a lot of things that nobody wants to talk about or even know about, man.
Well, he had to build a beachhead in Appalachia, and he did it in West Virginia, also because he was Roman Catholic. You know, I suppose that is a mark of progress that John Kennedy had to convince the world or convince the country. Convince white people that he wouldn't take his marching orders from Rome. And here we were in 2020, and there was really not any kind of a discussion of Joe Biden's Catholicness. So that's progress. But there needs to be progress for a lot of other people too.
That is true. Because, like I say, we are a melting pot. And for some reason, some people don't understand what the word melting pot means. I mean, here you are. We are a country of immigrants. We are the ultimate experiment. And I'm like this. The people who don't want to be part of the experiment, get your ass out of the country. Just leave. Go.
Go somewhere else and be. Go somewhere else and celebrate your unique Anglo-Saxon heritage.
Like I said earlier, Marjorie Greene, I don't know, like I said, she don't lost her mind. She's in the Republican Party, which is 99.4% white. And what in the fuck does she mean to need a white caucus? You're already in a white caucus, stupid.
Well, that was the Ku Klux Caucus. I mean, you know.
Well, they wanted to have a clam bake. Oh, I had a good one I wanted to eat. I was going to sit there.
that's for clan. We're going to have a clan bake.
Yeah, I was going to use a statement using the sex clams and Miss Green. Like I said, I didn't want to mess with nobody's dinner. Okay, so I'm gonna have to rethink it and put it out. I write it down so I can share it with you one day when I can mess up somebody, when I feel like messing up somebody's dinner.
Okay, good enough.
Yeah, but you know. I'm glad everything's going good for you, the surgeries and all that. You know, if I didn't have so many children, five, that are all adults that need my help, I would be happy to contribute. But, you know, hey.
I know.
Family first. I got to do family first.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Jesus. And now I wish you were my angry architect, too, because shit ain't going like I want it. Me and my mother were having a good conversation, man, and she had me laughing, sitting there telling me, I said, you know what, Mom? We're both done got over the age of 60, and life was supposed to be simple. She said, it is simple. You just keep making it complicated. And I told her, okay, fine. I'm going back to the office. Man, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. My best to your mama, Lamar. I'm gonna roll along here and get a couple more calls in while I've still got the gumption to
you,
do it.
Are you? I got one question.
Yeah.
Is the format going to be the same like today for the rest of the week?
I'm going to try to be here as often. I got an appointment tomorrow to let them check out all this bruising that's in the aftermath, and assuming that they don't tell me otherwise, I'll be here tomorrow night, and I got to get my strength back. Right now, my nutrition's really, really poor because I can't eat. And so I'm knocking out a lot of soup and a lot of yogurt and stuff like that. And it just, it's hard to get enough protein that way. I'm going to attempt some refried beans after the program this evening. And I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. I got me some enchilada sauce to go with it.
Get you some hot sauce and some toilet paper and you'll be ready. You'll be set.
There we go.
I had to mess up somebody's dinner in the.
Yeah, but you know, it's hard to avoid when it's in you and it's in the moment, Lamar. You take care of yourself, my friend. Yeah. You hear?
Okay, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
All right. See you, Lamar. Bye now.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
The one and only Lamar the Magnificent calling from Southern California. And get you some hot sauce and some toilet paper and get to Jesus Christ, really? Let's check in with Steve in New York. Hey, Steve.
Good, what is this, evening?
Ish.
How you doing?
I'm holding up better than I expected. I'm into the third hour of the program. Oh, and I got to send out thanks to Jeremy. Thanks for reminding me. Jeremy went ahead and finished off the challenge from Joey and Giraffe. So we are now down to 560. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you. Let me check in on a couple of other things. Bear with me for a second.
No worries.
Matt in San Francisco said the San Francisco riot was the Compton's cafeteria riot. Okay, so that's thank you for that information, Matt. I appreciate it. Let's see. Am I missing anything else here? Jeremy did say he has no gripe with Carl in Massachusetts. He's not completely wrong. Vermont and New Hampshire are very close spiritually. So good, good, good. Where'd it go? There it is. Jeremy said, I'm knocking out Joey's challenge. Somebody please match me. So that's, get down to $500 or so. That'd be wonderful if we could. Thank you, Jude. Just got home, Jude says. Sent me a lovely picture of some beautiful tulips in her yard. And hearing your great voice does my soul well. I hope you move through the oral surgery without too much discomfort. I offer you the tulips enclosed as a gift from one woman to another. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so very much. That is just the essence of sweetness and kindness and goodness. And, Steve, tomorrow, I just got a little worried at all this discoloration and bruising and stuff because it's like running down my neck and it's creepy as shit. So I'm gonna pop in tomorrow and hopefully they will look at it and go, nah, it's okay. And I'll just come home and we'll do the program tomorrow evening.
Whoa. Are you prone to bruising?
No, but I take an aspirin every day, and I take a lot of ibuprofen, so that means my blood's pretty thin.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny. Not funny, but interesting. I had an infected. I know we'll forget this. I had an infected, not impacted, infected wisdom tooth in 1989, my freshman year of college, and it was painful. And I had to have emergency surgery to have it taken out, but I never had any bruising.
Well, they got eight. They took eight out of the front of my lower, and I guess there's just going to be, because the mouth is a very the blood rich area,
mm-hmm.
And the pain was really fucking awful. For the first 48 hours or so, and there was a lot of, and frankly, I was afraid of the opioids because I took two of them, one, and then 6 hours later took another, but then I was afraid to take the other two because if it got any worse, then I would take it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now mm-hmm. we've gotten to this point, and the swelling has gone down some. I've been icing the hell out of my face.
Mm-hmm.
It's really uncomfortable, and like I was telling Lamar, it's hard to really get meaningful nutrition this way.
Well, what about protein shakes?
It's a possibility. I've been leaning on the Dairy Queen shakes instead, just because they taste so damn much better.
You know what you should do? Here's what you should do. You should do a protein shake, but put some ice in it. That way it makes it smoothie-ish, and it's cold, and then you can put that cold...
And then you don't taste the awfulness of the protein stuff.
Well, but you also can hold it in your... Yeah, but you can hold it in your mouth for a little bit, and it might help a little bit with the swelling while giving you some nutrition, or I'm just talking out of my ass. I mean...
No, I get it. It's I have to, you know, Agnes was handed, she said, come on, take drink a bottle of Boost. I'm like, ew.
Yeah, don't drink that. I'm saying get some almond milk, get some protein powder. If you have a blender or a mix, whatever the hell they're called, put some raspberries or strawberries in that.
Yeah.
And, you know. I'm just trying to help, man, because I...
That's okay.
You know, I'm just trying to help.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to tell... I don't know if you saw... I think I emailed... you know what? I'm honestly... Right now, do things and... Or think that I do them and don't... Or don't think that I do them and do... Or don't know whether I did or didn't. But I emailed you about, you know, I've been thinking about what Maxine or what the congresswoman said today. What struck me, and maybe you said this on air and I just didn't hear it. Like, as Lamar said, in the 60s, you had the civil rights marches. And then you had the Freedom Riders who went down south and sat at lunch counter. They just sat there. People, you know, they would walk in and people would say, you need to get out of here. You can't be here, blah, 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 blah. And they were more confrontational. Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm listening. Oh,
okay. Oh, okay. They were more confrontational by sitting at the counter and not leaving. They didn't break up the joint. They didn't. All they did was sit there. They wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
And
then there was the application of economic punishment, namely the Montgomery bus boycott, things like that.
Or civil disobedience, where you march, but then you go, okay, we're just going to sit down, and we're not going to move until you move us. You know, as I said in my email, look, if you have a propensity to violence, you see that as more violent. You know, whatever you say about, you know, BLM or whatever, or about those of us on the left, more left side of the spectrum, we're not the ones with the guns. We're not the ones shooting up the Capitol.
Right.
So, you know, if in your soul it's the propensity is violence, then you're going to see confrontation the same as violence. If you don't, I mean, again, the analogy to me was the Freedom Riders. They weren't violent, but they were certainly more confrontational.
Yeah.
So that's all I saw.
That's what she was talking about. She wasn't saying, you know, go firebomb the police or anything. And the fact of the matter is, I'm getting sick and tired, Steve, of this notion that and the way that it goes so often unrefuted in the millionaire media. How many times do we have to have it proven that the people doing all the burning and the looting were fucking the Proud Boys and you know, skinheads and neo-Nazis and shit like that? I mean, it's been proven time and again. And then, you know, the ultimate proof was January the 6th.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there was that one asshole saying, you know, Kamala Harris... raised bail money for BLM and Antifa terrorists. Horseshit. Show me an act of terrorism. Because the only acts of terrorism that I can find, Steve, are the ones that are being perpetrated by, you know, the Anglo-Saxon caucus members.
Oh, my God. When I heard that, I was like, when I saw that, I thought, oh, everybody who has three brain cells looked at that and went, oh, I know what they mean.
Cut to him right.
It was the white papal caucus. And when you looked at the people who joined it, or who were going to join it, you know, it was all the more reason to go, oh, now I see what the hell's going on here.
Yeah, the Ku Klux Caucus.
The Ku Klux Caucus, which was perfect. Yeah. But, I just want to call in real quick just to see how you were doing. Just to, give my little piece. I'm committed to talking a lot less, both in my personal life and on here, and doing a lot more listening.
Don't do that. You don't have to do that.
No, but perhaps I don't have to, but I'm choosing to do that. I need to listen a lot more. It's tough because I'm so fucking intelligent.
Modest, but, too.
Oh, very modest. In fact, I wrote a 10-volume treatise on my modesty. And one of these days, if we have a week of shows or programs, I will we'll talk about that. It's like Ken Burns should do a miniseries on my modesty. It's incredible how modest I am.
I can tell. I can tell.
Yes,
it just pervades your every statement.
Yes.
Speaking of which, if you have not, I cannot speak highly enough of that Hemingway documentary. I mean, in the course of 6 hours of a 60-year life, you're going to miss a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But holy shit. I mean, it was that was a really, really powerful piece of documentary making. Now, what I'm afraid of, though, is Ken Burns has decided to do the biography of Muhammad Ali. And I just have a hard time imagining that's going to end well.
All you can do is wait and see. I don't know how many Ken Burns miniseries I've watched, but I find it's from reading people who see them, it's kind of a hit or miss. It can be fantastic or decidedly mediocre. I don't know. I haven't watched them. I don't have the patience, and I don't care that much about baseball. For instance, or the Civil War, more than what I've already read and studied. And I can only see so many Matthew Brady pictures. But that's kind of the general whatever that I hear.
Yeah.
Is that, I don't know, is that, do you find that to be the case, that it's kind of a hit or miss with him?
It's kind of, he sort of predictably tries to ride the middle of the road. I mean, I was really disappointed in the Vietnam documentary. Just because of what, again, what got left out.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, it is one of those things where, how do you put how many years of that into, a few whatever. By the way, I don't know if you've looked and seen what's going on in Canada with COVID, particularly in Ontario. It really is a disaster. And oddly, they have a Trump type character who is the what's called the premier of Ontario. But it's bad.
I saw a post from Ron in the far recently unfrozen north.
Right. Yeah, Ron and I have been kind of communicating back and forth on it. So, yeah.
And, I mean, they're going into a hardcore shutdown.
Yep.
But it may be the thing is, it may be the right thing to do. I got a story here in the stack today. The head of the World Health Organization says that, you know, we can end this thing in a few months' time. All we have to do is want to.
You know what? You and I, how many times have we talked about 6 to 8 weeks?
Yeah.
And you know, here's the dirty little secret about the shutdown, quote unquote, in Ontario. It's not really a shutdown. They're allowing grocery stores and some restaurants to stay open as long as they're outdoor. It's not really a shutdown in the same way that we would think of a shutdown. And you know, since my partner's up there, I hear he and I talk about it all the time. The epidemiologists are predicting that they're going to probably be up around, and this is in Ontario alone, 18,000 cases a day. I think they said by the end of May.
Jesus.
I've looked up the population of Ontario is only 15.3 million people.
And that's a horrifying that works out to a horrifying percentage.
Yes, it does. If you extrapolate that to our population, which is what about one? That's about 1/20 of our population. That's 360,000 cases a day.
Jesus. And see, there is a further consideration, Steve,
mm-hmm.
where COVID is concerned, and it may seem superfluous or but it isn't. And that is, we are living in a time right now when there are, you know, there aren't necessarily a bunch of bullets flying or bombs falling, but there is very much an ideological conflict playing out the world over. And the primary combatant, that's the wrong mm-hmm. word, and I'm not being xenophobic or saber, is China. Because what China is telling the world is, look, it happened here, we got it under control, but the liberal democracies of the West can't do that. Our system is better. And from the standpoint of actually bringing the damn virus under control, they're kind of right. Because we will not get our shit together.
Well,
it's the same thing that played out in the Peloponnesian War. You know, you had an authoritarian regime in Sparta, and you had a liberal democracy in Athens, and in the end, Athens couldn't get its shit together, and goodbye democracy. That was the end of democracy for thousands of years. At least a couple thousand.
Mm-hmm. But and the other rub is this, is that, you know, the quote unquote liberal democracies aren't really keen on sealing up their citizens' doors with bricks and mortar.
No, they aren't.
So,
but it's beyond that. It is the cantankerousness of assholes who put their notion of their individual rights ahead of the needs of the community.
Yeah.
When in fact, there were communitarian aspects to the beginnings of this country. You know, the Mayflower Compact and what's his name? John Bradford talking about the shining city on the hill. You know, Reagan didn't come up with that. That was a bunch of white colonialists who, mm-hmm. by the way, had no room in their shining city on the hill for anybody anybody darker than the sails of the fucking Mayflower.
Right. No, I hear you.
But you know, you got this one preacher, and you know, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday or things, that disease spreading asshole down in Louisiana, Pastor Spellcaster.
Is that his name?
His name's Spell.
Oh, okay.
But I call him Pastor Spellcaster. He says, "Well, you know, I'm not going to wear no mask, and I'm going to keep spreading the disease because I am not a scientist. I am a prophet." And so, and you know, time after time after time with these preachers, and they are active bioterrorists. They are killing people. But because we have created this fetishized vision of free speech and freedom of religion, they get to keep spreading. They get to keep doing it to us. You know, I remember when this thing started a year ago, about this time, I was going around every Sunday and driving around my community.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember that.
Looking at the parking lots full of cars on Sunday morning. And one of the places where COVID first broke out and did heartbreaking damage was in some black churches in northern West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is ingrained and it is culturally ingrained that, you know, that is your home base. And people really, really grieve if they don't get to go. And we can't see past this individualistic need to do what is best for all of us, which is exactly the origins of early Christianity. You know, we held all things in common.
Right. I mean, let's be honest here. If you go back, what became the Catholic Mass really evolved out of, you know, what was the Sunday worship? It was basically a potluck, if I'm not mistaken. So. And you know what? I don't know if you remember this. This really illustrates your point. There was a, I believe it was in Columbus. There was a church there in Columbus that kept meeting, and this reporter interviewed this woman, and they said, "Well, what about, you know, you giving it to other people?" "Well, I don't have it." "But how do you know you don't?" "Because I'm washed."
"Because I'm washed in the blood of the Lamb." Yep.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And I remember thinking to myself, it never occurred to her that she might not know she had it, or somebody else might not know she had it, and she could get it or give it. And what I don't understand is this. We could kill this, or we could severely curtail this within 6 to 8 weeks. By drawing this out as we have, now people have, and I confess I'm in this boat. People have COVID fatigue. I can't tell you, you know, I've had a number of times in the last few weeks where I'm like, I am so sick of masking and having to stay home as much as possible and having nowhere to go. And I'm sick of it. Doesn't mean I'm going to stop doing it. But, you know, I'm a social person.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky. I live in a national park. And so, you know, we got 1,600 miles of trails. And I've got a reasonably good chance of getting out and just walking a trail and not running into anybody. So I can, you know, I can get a little bit of it out of my system.
Mm-hmm.
But here, for instance, now that we have national park status as opposed to being a national scenic river or national whatever, we're a frickin' national mm-hmm. park. And it is so tough because this place, I mean, it doesn't trickle down. It never does, but it's booming. Mm-hmm. There are cabins going up all over the place, you know, for people to rent when they come here. The season, did you see the scare quotes,
mm-hmm.
hasn't even begun here. And already there are people coming here from England, France, Germany, Nigeria, Asian countries. Because we're wide open, and that's one of the things that the Biden administration, to whom we have given great credit, needs to rethink. Because Europe is having a devil of a time. France is locking down. Germany's locking back down.
Italy. All of them, yeah.
Yeah. And yet we're open to anybody who wants to get on a plane and fly over here. And like I said, these are the tourists are pouring in the little dirt and gravel parking lots where people park to go and climb rocks, climb the cliffs of the gorge. In any given day, they are full of cars already, and they're from all over the place. Of course, the local cops are running their tax collection scam. Right? It's nothing. They pull people over left and right. Writing tickets for all they're worth, and 9 times out of 10, maybe not that much, but pretty close. It's always an out of state plate that's being pulled over, because it's a shakedown.
Sure, I mean, if I were from a foreign country and someone gave me a ticket, I'd be like, "Well, when I leave, see ya."
Yeah,
I ain't paying it.
But, you know, it's people from Georgia, it's people from Ohio, it's people from Pennsylvania, it's people from Kentucky.
Right, I hear you.
Oh, and Matt in San Francisco, COVID in the USA. Matt says, I'm confident, like all challenges Merca faces, we will do the right thing after we have tried everything else. Yeah, that's pretty much the freaking truth.
But you know what, I'm going to tell you something. And again, this has a lot to do with having a partner in Canada and hearing intimately what's going on. I've almost come to the conclusion that almost, you know, crazy is like a scale. And crazy is like water. I don't know if you know, scientifically, water, what's the phrase? Water, or liquid, a liquid and a gas is the same way. It fills its space.
Water will always seek its own level.
Correct. And whereas we might have crazy over here in one way, Canada has its crazy in another way. But if you go and you really start looking at Canudlia, I mean, Robin, they have some crazy, like you would not believe.
Oh, they got maggots up there too, you know.
But they have some crazy that's, you know.
It's crazy with maple syrup on it.
It's crazy with maple syrup on it. It might taste a little better, where you know you might get a little taste off it, but you know they have crazy, without getting into, we'll have to someday on the front porch or whatever talk about their government versus our government and everyone talking about parliamentary system and all that. Well, I'll just say this. Canada is probably less democratic than we are.
Yeah. It depends on how you define that.
They don't elect their Senate. They only elect their House of Commons. They don't elect... they don't have an independent judiciary in the same way. They have a royal figurehead who actually does have, I mean, contrary to what people say, who actually does have power, whom the prime minister, whom the people do not elect. And I think a lot of people probably don't realize that in Canada, you don't elect the chief executive because there is no separation of powers. But we're all over the place tonight.
Happens.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, for another time. Like I said, I just called in, wanted to see how you were doing. Kind of dispel some of the anti-Maxine shit, because that really kind of, it just got my ire up. And it's not that I'm such a big supporter of hers. It's just like, I get so sick of these damn right-wingers getting all butthurt over something somebody says. And if you actually look at what she said, you say,
she was merely repeating the language of the civil rights struggle as it pre-existed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hear anything about, okay, I didn't hear, we need to start getting our guns, and then we got to get our torches and burn down our all the police stations and the houses. And like I said, if you have a propensity for violence, that's what you hear. Or if you're a moron like Chris Saliza, you know. But I have a friend of mine who's a fellow attorney. We talk about stuff all the time. She and I are generally on the same wavelength when it comes to politics, but she's like, oh my God, I can't believe what Maxine Waters said. Oh, she's just, and I said, what did she say? She said, be more confrontational. She didn't say burn buildings down. She didn't say shoot cops. She didn't, what does be more confrontational mean? It means to me is, instead of dispersing, we stay. That's all it means to me. I mean, you know, yeah. I'm not moving. You're going to have to move me. That's what it means to me. I don't know. I mean, is that, I suspect that's an awful lot of the Horn family thought the same thing I did. Well, that's what that means.
Yeah.
So
persistence, you know,
persistence.
Calvin Coolidge said nothing can take the place of persistence.
That's a great, you may tell you what, when I first read that quotation from him, I thought, wait a minute.
I had to memorize that.
Yeah. But I thought, the Calvin Coolidge, you know, the business of America is, wasn't he that, wasn't that him?
Yeah.
He's the one who said something so insightful. You know. So in any event, well, listen, I'm going to head off here. I want to finish up some work. I suspect Scott is somewhere out there going, he wants to call in soon. So I'm going to step off here and then go back to listening just on the stream. But you sound good. Hang in there. I just want to tell you, I wanted to put some money in the till. However, I just had a $423 vet bill this weekend.
Ouch.
Yeah. We had to have our semi-annual blood work to check on the diabetes. So, and what stinks is, you know, it was like, I didn't know, but I've had that done beforehand. It was about 290 to 300. And they don't tell you beforehand. It's okay. Here's what it costs.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Yeah, so you went to the vet and had a radical cachectomy.
Yes, yes, yes. And right now, I only have one cheek because of it.
Mm-hmm. And they cut the wallet out, and they take everything with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, indeed they do. Okay, listen, I'm gonna run. You take care of yourself, okay? And we need to figure that other stuff out.
We will, and just, you know.
I'm just
moving a little slow.
No, listen. It'll get done. You need to worry about you right now. It'll get done, but you need to worry about you. So, if it takes a little longer than necessary, fine. You need to worry about you.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. You take care, Steve. We'll talk soon.
Have a good night.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Our buddy Steve calling from New York. And Flavio was right behind him. Hey, Flavio.
Hey, I just wanted to welcome you back.
Yeah, it feels like I was gone for a month. Honest to God, it does.
Good God, yes. And I want you to acknowledge my scholarship.
Oh, the H.L. Mencken? That was fantastic.
Oh, come on, man. that's some of the best stuff. Stuff that he says about the Anglo-Saxon. I mean,
no, he despised that racist garbage early.
Oh, early on, and you know, he was one of the first promoters. Okay, a little background. Flavio, as an undergraduate, studied under the late James Lafke of La Crosse, Wisconsin, and he was a teacher of Afro-American literature. He was a white man from Canada who taught Afro-American literature, and I thought I'd take Afro-American authors. He also taught children's literature, so I took I didn't take children's literature. I took Afro-American literature and Afro-American authors. So I learned about Richard Wright. And Richard Wright was kind of promoted by H.L. Mencken, you know? He supported, he was one of the early pioneers, H.L. Mencken. And Richard Wright also was influenced by having read Prejudices, you know, all the entire series of the anthologies of Prejudices by H.L. Mencken. That's how he, that was his intellectual becoming, right? Richard Wright?
Yeah.
Are you there?
I'm here.
What is it? You know Richard Wright?
Yes.
Okay, so this Portuguese guy, this white Portuguese guy, knows a lot about Afro-American literature through a Canadian. And, yeah, I was fascinated. I read Zora Neale Hurston, Their Eyes Were Watching God. Black Boy by Richard Wright. My favorite to this day, and I have to read it again because it is a trippy novel. Invisible Man.
Yes.
By Ralph Ellison. My favorite. That novel is deep. It's deep. It's just like, whoa, out there. Wow. That novel.
Well, that's the power of literature to change lives.
If you want to understand Black America, you got to read that novel. My God, it's deep. I mean.
Yeah, but eminently readable, too.
Oh, I could, yeah, it's out there. And my professor at college had recorded an interview with him, and I had the photostat, and I lost it, you know, because he moved and everything, and it was a private thing that they did, you know, over the telephone. It was like he interviewed Ralph Ellison on the telephone from Michigan. Sorry. Little allergy season thing, cough. I made a copy of that. Jim told me not to do that because he didn't have permission, but I had for myself, so I could. But I probably lost it in the many moves that I, you know, from Madison to La Crosse, and back and forth between the two cities. But wow. I take it you've read a lot of these novels.
Back in college, yeah.
Native Son, Black Boy, Their Eyes Are Watching God, Invisible Man. You, they're just great. They're just, you know, the playwright who went to UW Wisconsin in Madison. Her name, Raisin in the Sun. Come on, help me out.
Oh God, I'm not. I am not at my absolute best right now.
No, no. I'll help you. A Raisin in the Sun.
Let's ask Dr. Google.
And that's that. Raisin in the Sun.
Lorraine Hansberry.
Lorraine Hansberry. Yes. Yeah, I mean, that play, you know, and... yeah, so I ended up reading a lot of that. And I'm not even... I'm Portuguese. But I was so interested in, you know, because this is America. America is black, is white. And so when I was in college, I got interested in that, and that was part of my English. The courses I took in English, I took composition from this teacher. I fell in love with this teacher because this teacher was like, a Canadian who had, from Nova Scotia, who had become an American, who had fought in the civil rights movements in the United States, who was really branché, as they say in French, or hip. And he taught children's literature, African-American literature, African-American authors, and I took all his courses, and... he became my mentor.
Life-changing.
Very much so. And then we became lifelong friends. He corresponded with me when I was studying in France. And I mean, it's just amazing. But yeah, you did enjoy the snippets from Mencken, you know, how the mongrel North bested the the inbred South, and you know how the South is like the breeding ground of fundamentalism, Ku Kluxery.
He
said that. He said that before anyone, before Tom Hartman. You know, Tom Hartman is so full of himself. But no, H.L. Mencken came up with that before Tom Hartman. I'm sorry, but it's true.
I try to refrain, but yeah. Refrain so, well...
In what sense?
Well, I try not to, you know... denigrate or critique
I'm just saying, people working
this side of the street.
No, but I'm just saying render unto Caesar, okay?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
And H.L. Mencken was right there, and that I read avidly, voraciously The Smart Set, Prejudices, just because I got a thrill of someone, of a wordsmith, someone who just knew how to just
say what needed to be said
and just devastate. Go ahead, I talk too much.
No, you're spot on. Now I wanted to have you a separate subject, but have you had your vaccine?
Yeah. You know, I've been dealing with multiple problems, my knees first, and then the fact that I need to get a new bed, because the springs are coming out of it, and it's not something I can. I live alone, so it's not like, you know, I'm not Hercules, so I can't trudge the. I can't
no.
put the mattresses upstairs, up four flights of stairs up to the fourth floor. So I got to figure out a few logistics about that, and I wonder if that didn't play into the fact that, you know, I've been having joint problems. The fact that I have a broken bed.
Yes.
I'm confronting the volleys that come at me, and I'm going to register. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, you know that.
Yeah. Well, I just didn't know if you'd had your vaccine yet.
Not yet, no. But you better believe I'm registering as soon as I can. And I just need to do it.
I'm not going to say that this is good news, but, you know, Jesus, it's at least, you know, those who live by the stupid will die by the stupid.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a pity because the story comes from Norway, where we kind of like to think people are a little bit more sane. Not so much.
They generally are.
Hans Christian Garder, big COVID-19 denier, said, this is no worse than a cold or a mild case of the flu. Host is 60 years old, hosted huge gatherings in violation of the law, spread the disease. You know, he's kind of, I guess you'd say that he's like unto those bug chasers of the AIDS epidemic. And, well, he's dead now.
Yeah.
Died April 6th. Said there was, you know, there was no purpose, there was no reason to, you know, to guard against it or to make mitigation efforts. It's no big deal. How is it that Jesse Lee Peterson puts it? He did.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, don't believe that they don't have those in Norway. They do.
Oh yeah,
but they're
that's the country that gave us Anders Breivik.
You know, but at the same time, you know, it's not the norm. Okay.
Yeah.
My hallmate in France was a Dane, and we would have conversations into the wee hours of the morning over wine and food and whatever. And most intelligent person ever, you know. And I knew Danes in Brazil as well. And that's not, you know. The majority of Danes are not like that. The majority of Swedes are not like that. But there are people in, you know, in the hinterlands, okay, in Norway, Tromsø, whatever, you know, that are just tweaked, okay? And they have...
Just twisted a bubble off plum.
Evangelicalism, and I mean, and I, if you read the dragon, the girl with the dragon tattoo trilogy, that is just par for the course in Sweden. I mean, the girl with the dragon tattoo, I mean, that. The Millennium Trilogy what is his name? He died really young, 54 years old. He died younger than me, my God. Stieg Larsson's yeah. Millennium Trilogy. I read all of those books. I mean, there's much truth in just those detective novels about the you know, they have the Anglo-Saxon.
Oh, I love a good detective yarn.
They have the Anglo-Saxon taint over there. They have the same, they have the, you know,
the same white supremacist that, yeah, again, yeah, Anders Breivik.
Stieg Larsson in Sweden. I'm talking Sweden now, but I'm sure the analogs in Stieg Larsson headed an anti-racist magazine, kind of like I forget the name of the one in London, but it was a mirror publication of a London anti-racism, anti-fascism publication. And to the end of his days, I mean, to the end of his life, you know, when he had a heart attack and, you know. But yeah, if you read Stieg Larsson's Millennium Trilogy, the girl with the dragon tattoo, the girl that that played with fire, the girl that troubled the hornet's nest, it's like three novels. You get an idea of the underworld, of the Nazi underworld in Scandinavia, and that's pretty frightening in and of itself.
Is the English translation pretty good?
Fantastic. Yeah, and Swedish is hard to translate because it's very idiomatic, very sui generis, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't pretend to speak Swedish, but back in the day when I was traipsing around in Europe, I did pick up on stuff, and it's a very demotic language. It's very, the written doesn't correspond to the spoken, and the spoken doesn't correspond, you know, it's like one of those, you know, it's like, wow. And translation is very difficult, but
it's interesting you would mention that because I've been talking. You know, you and I discussed the Hemingway documentary a little bit, and I watched it all the way through, and I'm still impressed. But one of the people they had commenting there was a Spanish author,
right?
And his Spanish was so very different from Western Hemisphere Spanish. Even I, as a non-Spanish speaker, could tell.
Right, and it is. But Swedish is really, it's really wiggy, the way their idiomatic phrases are just precious. You know, it's, but the English translation, which I read, is really good, and it's written and it was translated by a Swedish American woman. My memory serves me.
In fact, we have a Swedish translator in the community here. Our buddy Scott
Jenny
Scott in Sweden.
Oh, okay. Yep. I thought Jenny was Swedish as well.
Not sure. Haven't heard from
in
Jenny.
In Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Fabio, I'm going to roll because I want to. I got one more line to get to, and I want to make sure that everybody gets in who wants to.
All right. No. Wonderful. Wonderful. You're back, and keep healing. And say a prayer for my knees, too, because, wow.
Oh, yeah, and well, you know, you even forgot the pain in your knees for a few minutes when you...
after the video with Jim Justice, yes.
Was that, I mean, am I wrong? Is that just, that silent movie comedy gold? And when he drops the fish, and then he flaps his hands.
Oh, my God. And then he's trying to forge that diamond with his ass.
It's a beautiful thing. and the poor guy from the fisheries with his net going, I'm gonna get fired. I'm so gonna get fired. Kinda like my job too, driving the stock truck around, leading the parade, and I'm gonna get fired. by the way, you're getting some praise. Shorty in L.A. says, hey, Fabio, happy today, sweetie pies. Great conversation. It reminds me of a book I read years and years ago, now a documentary, a must-see, best documentary of 2021, well, at least to me. It's a four-part series on HBO called Exterminate All the Brutes, based on that famous book by Sven Lindqvist with the same title. The film is not for those with a weak stomach. The director who did it also did I Am Not Your Negro.
Ooh, I saw that. Oh, that's excellent. I Am Not Your Negro. Yep. That was wonderful. But I really recommend anyone wants to know what's, the underbelly of the perfect Scandinavian society. Well, it's not so perfect.
No, it isn't. Flavio, you have yourself a good evening. Take care of your knees and get that mattress up the stairs and get your damn shot.
I will.
All right. Take care, my friend. Bye.
Bye.
Our pal Flavio calling from lovely La Crosse. And last call of the evening. Hey, I made it 3 hours. Welcome to the program. Hello? You're on the air. Yeah. Going once. I know I got the right button pushed. Going twice. And
hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, I think I need to get in here. Bob, this is Scary Jerry. How the fuck
Scary
are you?
Scary Jerry, how in the world are you?
Robin.
That's okay.
I'm doing bad, man.
What's up?
I'm doing bad.
What's wrong?
Well, let's start at the beginning. And it's not even a meltdown, but if I wanted to have a meltdown, the boat is now in the harbor, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
I'm listening to your show last week or the week after, and I'm like totally freaking emotionally dealing with everything. And then I'm like, oh my God, I can't deal with this. One of the voice of reason, the voice of liberal activism is turning into a girl. And I gotta be honest, I've had a hard time with it.
Well, not really turning into, been one all along, just making the outside match the inside.
I realized that today. I imagined a machine with plastic film on it. And the girl machines get a type of film. The boys machines get a type of film. They go to they get the film first, then they get the face of the boy or the girl, but that comes afterwards. So basically, in this 21st century, and this is a lot to wrap it. Bob, do you know how good your voice was? And I can hear it changing.
Oh, that's just me playing with it a little bit. I mean, it's still there.
I can hear it. Here's the point, though. You are who you always was, as you said. And if we love you, like we say we do, and if we're, this is the type of shit liberals put up with.
Right. Yeah, that's. Can you imagine Sean Hannity doing what I'm doing?
No, and you know what? I would put on a rainbow flag
hat.
They would
burn him at the stake.
They're not as evolved. I'm starting to. I don't know. All right, screw you. Let's talk about me.
Okay.
I'm going through the American healthcare system right now in a raft of absurdities, riding a river of lies. And it ain't even me. I'm at the changing room for capitalism, waiting for that last group, the guys who wear suits and ties and go, how much do you want to pay for your box? And that's where I'm at. And I brought up that show because at the moment, it represented all the absurdities going on in my life and the lack of the too much change thing going on and how this is all just too much. So you were a symptom of what the hell I was going through and still going through. Let me bring the group up to a speed.
Please.
March 4th, was it? Carolyn had her feeding tube broke. Just from now looking back at it, she was just too active and too healthy. She could do all the things you could do in a feeding tube except eat. So she literally was dancing around to some music 3 days before. She goes, oh shit, I broke it. Okay. So she broke the feeding tube. And I'm calling them out, fucking Florida Memorial in Hollywood. For people who need to hit the fast forward button, she's still alive. So I'll keep you out of, I'm not going to stress y'all out of that. They bounced around in the emergency room for a day and a half. I literally, they must have got somebody who was, you know, in a foreign espionage thing or a fugitive, because the person who worked on her, I'm not even sure it was a doctor. And I could see when she got home that she wasn't right. But what the fuck do I know? I've never picked up a medical thing, even though I was pre-med, believe it or not. That's very important to the story. So I understand from having nurses and everything around me, I understand when people did the right thing. I understand when the doctor fucked up. I understand when the nurse fucked up. I can, just from them reading the notes, I can tell you who fucked up along the way. Anyways, the long story short is they fucked up her feeding tube. They punctured her.
Oh, no.
Intestines.
Yeah, oh,
you
Jesus.
Heard that right.
I think the fancy term they use is perforated.
Perforated, that is the term, yes. And all of a sudden, she has this infection and don't know where it came from. And she's swelling up and da, 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 da. And I change her food because maybe she's allergic to fucking dairy or who the hell knows. And Carolyn's the toughest human being I've ever met. All 5'1", or maybe not 5 inches of her. All of a sudden, she needs my help to go to the bathroom, and she's starting to talk gibberish. And all I can think is I fucked her up somehow.
Oh, God, don't do that to yourself. Don't do that to yourself.
But let's go to the hospital. She goes, I need to go to the hospital. Pain is transitory. And I'm like, all right, well, you know how much we hate hospitals. So I'll just give it an hour. If you still feel like it, we're going, all right? 45 minutes later, we're in the car going to the hospital because she looks like hell. And because of COVID protocols, that's the last time I seen her. What day was that? That was on March 20th.
Can't go in.
March 20th. So I need to find a nurse I need to get a nurse for her so we can plan her discharge. And I'm glad she's alive. And I'm just as like part of the how many of our period that I have to go through to get my shit together and, you know, get the how bad I think she's doing off my face and start taking care of her again. Which I'm grateful for. I may be monotheistic, but God doesn't need a church or a leg or anything else like that. And I've been talking to something all along the way, the same, whatever it was that I talked to about my mom. And the answers have been consistent. The entity I talked to about my mom said, hey, it happened. Make your peace. Gave me 4 months, though. But Jesus. The more they did, the worse she got. The entity this time said she's going to live. But you're going to have to take care of her because she's really backed up. And this is all on them. We're like a year past surgery. Oh, and this is an added nugget, because it seems like sickness brings out the best and worst in people. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You want predators to come out, say you're sick, man. The person we met, we thought was the coolest person ever. Gonna throw her name out there too. Amber Levy, you're a piece of shit. I hope there is a hell. I really do. You still hope. You piece of shit. So that's it. Normally I just bail of happiness and optimism and just different perspectives.
And sometimes that isn't possible.
Tonight it's not. Tonight is the reason why all the conversations I have and goes, well, Bob, that's because we all, if you're a true Hornista, you talk to Bob when nobody's in the room. Admit it. You just kind of chime along. It's kind of like singing choruses in church, but the reason I don't have a gun is because I shoot people. That's the number one reason. And my hand wouldn't shake and my voice wouldn't even raise. My brother has all the family guns. So if you want to shoot somebody, you got to talk to him. I think that's a good system.
Jeez.
I really do. Seriously.
Yeah.
I think that's a good system. I think the fucked up system that my drug dealer is my best counselor, and I have insurance. And I think it's a more fucked up system that to get things to run right, you need a criminal. What fucked up is that?
Well, you know, Mussolini made the trains run on time. Isn't that what they say?
Well, we're not even talking about Mussolini. We're talking about, say, I don't know, too much for the end of a night like this. But I think the spirit that runs the universe put the fight of trans on your shoulders, and they picked well because they needed a fighter. They needed a champion.
Well, thank you.
You know what I'm saying, Bob?
I hope I can. I hope I can be.
You're not going to take it laying down, and you won't climb in the closet and just shut the fuck up. Those days are over.
Yeah. No. No. 50 plus, half a century in the closet is plenty. More than enough.
Hell, my closet is just, it's true with me being articulate. An articulate black man. Well, shit, I've seen a lot of articulate black men dead lately.
Yeah, articulateness doesn't save lives. And frankly, the cops.
That's how I was raised. That was
yeah. But the cops don't give a damn how articulate you are.
No, that's the terrifying part. That's when the hands start shaking. I've noticed. And I don't know. Hey, there's three cops right here, right now. Let me should ask them if they want to be in the show.
No, let's don't say we didn't.
No. Because I have a Audrey has a little voice in the head, and my voice goes, oh, so you want to pretend you're a white man to the police again? That never ends well.
I can imagine it doesn't.
No, because, as I said before, I'm an immigrant. You know, there's a lot of racism that they teach you in this country before you're even 5 years old. and I missed all those lessons. I believe that shit when they said, "Oh, you're just like anybody else. You got as much opportunity as anybody else." No, that's not entirely true. Although the opportunities I got, I've had more than most. But even 0 to 5, you learn those lessons, those lessons of oppression. In fact, I remember once I saw some kids, because we all, when we were kids, we played cops and robbers. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And you kind of existentially kick the side when you're a little kid. It's weird the way that works. And I was watching some kids playing cops and robbers. And when the robber said, "We did," the kids, 6, 7, 8 years old, the kids, they kept killing their prisoners because that's what they saw on TV. That's one of the more terrifying moments I've had ever in my life. I'm going to have people fire their guns. Yeah, sure.
It would be. Of course.
And they were yelling, "Stop resisting." The kids.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old thing that kids would do to each other where, you know, the bigger kid grabs your wrist and makes you hit yourself in the face and tells you to stop hitting yourself. Remember that one?
Yeah, this is way past that.
Yeah, it is.
When I was a little kid, if the robber said, "I give," then you'd have to go in jail and then make some little girl the jailer or something like that. But yeah, that was it. And you get kicked out of the game if you, as a cop, decided that you didn't have to stop. And we no longer live in that world either. And things are not okay. They're not.
No.
And I'm tired of people jumping up and down and saying they are. We're going to, "You have the problem. You're the one with the feelings."
Oh, no. There's look, I do not, as much as I love warm weather and beautiful beaches and whatnot, I do not envy you being in Florida. There's a crackdown coming.
I love where I'm at.
There's a crackdown coming, Jerry. This bill that DeSantis signed today, the anti-riot bill, it's going to be cops gone wild.
Yes, it is. Especially in Yeehaw, Florida. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I don't know. But me being a 7-day adventurer. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Our whole permit. Ellen G. White said that Christian fascism is going to destroy this country. And she saw it looking in her little crystal ball 150 years ago. And here, well, this is not anything to be quiet about. It kind of kicked me in the balls and shook when you had one of those little repug pukes say, "No, Jesus don't want you to work on Sunday." And I was like, there it is. If y'all been looking for a sign, there it is. So I fully expect the Sanctus to whip out some weird, we should all put our hands in our lap on Sunday. That's the spear that awaits to beast up Sunday worship that Jesus said, "I need you to worship on Sunday." Not Friday, not Saturday, but Sunday. And all you Jews who are sitting in the bus, who are thinking, "Hey, we get to drive this time." No. Thanks for your support. Put this gas mask on. Because that's the other thing I saw, too. You had a lot of right-wing Jews think, "Oh, no, Nazism is fine as long as we're doing the Nazism." That kicked me in my balls, too.
This is a scary fucking country.
You remember when Trump came to Aventura to talk to the Jews and stuff?
Yep.
That rally? That's what that was about. I mean, that was the wink, wink, nod. Oh, so, a Holocaust is okay just as long as you guys are pulling the lever. And no Jews have gotten up and jumped out, up and down about that. And I'm very disappointed because, in my mind, Jews are my superheroes. They've always been the cool white people you can count on. So for them to go, "Oh, no, we're down with the oppression." And for the Indians to go, "Well, they're not persecuting our caste, so I don't see what the problem is." It's terrifying, Bob.
Well, let's just face it. Anybody who stands in support of Donald Trump and his ilk, or remains silent in the face of their evil, there is something morally and probably cerebrally wrong with them.
That's more than that. They're evil.
Well, that's the result of the defects, is the evil.
You can't tell me you can't defend a baby being separated from his mama and call that an immigration thing. I could punch you in the face for that. What is wrong with you? What Bible are you reading where that's okay?
Well, that's the, you know, but that goes back to what we've said all along, Jerry. They spend all their time thumping it and none of their time reading it.
But then when Trump goes, no, we're being mean to children to set a message. Jesus Christ. The reason why we're getting run over by immigrants right now is because of climate change. They had two Category 5 fucking hurricanes less than 6 months ago. Not one, two in 10 days. It went over the same spot it ran over. 200 miles an hour. Have a little fucking compassion. And you know what? I'm waving my finger at the immigrants here in South Florida. Because none of y'all were here 50 years ago. So shut the fuck up, too.
Well, once the privilege sinks in, it's hard to nobody wants to let go of it.
Well, you know how many people who don't really, if they were in Alabama or Mississippi or something, they would, their hands would be on the side of the car too as they're tossing their car. But they get to South Florida, you know, you get whiteness points for certain skin colors. Doesn't matter where you come from. So they're driving around the white bus. There's a lot of people out there chuckling. You know what I'm talking about. Passing is white. So there's a lot of Nazis down here who ain't white. But they're down with
the look at the leader of the fucking Proud Boys. Enrique Tarrio. That ain't exactly a WASP name.
Snitching Enrique Tarrio. Get it right. Gotta get it right, Buff.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
He's a snitch.
Yeah, the snitch.
Yeah,
the
snitching, because South Florida doesn't like snitches. That is one thing where every, you know.
No, we all know the rhyme. No, we all know the rhyme.
That. South Florida, they don't. And a snitch tag, but you can carry a snitch tag here 100 years. What are we going to do, Bob?
Well, we're going to ride it through. Because, you know, there's no alternative. Tina, there is no alternative. And we do the best that we can to support each other. We speak out against injustice. We refuse the complicity of silence. At least that's what I'm trying to do.
Love and directness. You just made a mess joke, though.
I did?
Tina, there is no, you know, yeah, you did. Yes, you did, Bob. Yes, you did. That was so funny. Oh, my God. Yeah, they call meth Tina.
Oh, I didn't realize. I didn't know that.
If there is a meth contingency, they all nodded their head approvingly and called Carlos or Chico, wherever it was.
Jesus, Jerry. Listen, my friend, you take care of yourself. I got I'm getting the baleful gaze from Agnes. So I got to. I'm a little.
Hey, Agnes.
Oh, she waved. And then went back out.
Thanks for keeping it together, Agnes. Screw Bob. What would we do without you?
It's exactly. There's the real truth.
We'd be staring at the phone going, there's nothing going on here. I don't understand. I guess I can watch a baseball game. But yeah.
Yeah, I think we're going to find something funny to watch tonight. I need the laughs. Desperately need the laughs.
You know, I've ran into, this is for the second time, I ran into a burn notice And I'm starting to love that show because that's the part of Florida I live, which is kind of really another country. And a lot of his takes on things are accurate as hell. And it's all comical and everybody loses at the end, so it's pretty good.
I need to check that out.
Burn Notice, about a spy who lost his credentials, and it's filmed all in South Florida. And when they point out places, they actually look at people, it'll be 10 minutes to get over there and they'll actually have the right footage. I'm like, good job, guys. Somebody did their homework.
Somebody knew.
Yeah, Burn Notice. Check it out, Bob.
I sure will. And listen, you take care of yourself and give our best regards, please, when you can.
Hang in here. What's your number at the end of the day?
Oh, the fundraising?
What are you looking at? Yeah,
560.
Yeah.
560.
All right. Going to put 25 down. As Carolyn would like, she's in the hospital. We're trying to figure out how to get her home at this point. But, yeah, she would not approve it. Lee, and she actually, I should have done it before now. Other stuff came up. But, yeah, and that's for Carolyn and everybody. Let's think her out of the hospital bed, guys.
Absolutely.
All we got is each other.
Pour the good energy. Hard time talking. Pour the good energy into it, and let's get her home.
I need her. All of you guys. Let's get that good energy, because I know you have it, because I've heard the stories, man.
Yeah.
I heard the stories. So Carolyn, Miss Carolyn Chipmunk, she needs your prayers. Whoever you got. You know, if you have any little Nas things, you can keep that. But other than that, yeah.
Done. Done, Jerry. Done.
You're still whoever you got.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, man.
Take care.
Take care.
Later. My buddy Scary Jerry calling from South Florida. A lot of burdens people are bearing. I had a Christine update meant to mention. Dave dropped me a note earlier today and said she is improving. She has improved to the point that she can get a little cantankerous with the staff. That's a wonderful thing. Her vision is improving. She can see the TV. And hopefully it will, her vision will become sharper and she will become stronger. Well, after I did not expect to be able to go 2 hours, let alone 3.5. But somehow we managed. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining in. I do so appreciate it. I was about half out of my mind being away because, you know, if you know anything about me, you know I cannot stand to not be here. And so I hope tomorrow that the oral surgeons goes okay and that as long as nobody, like, screams or passes out when they see me, we'll be doing better. And with any luck at all, I'll be back here 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 p.m. Pacific. In the meantime, take care. And thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air as partial sponsors of the Horn. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal contributors, subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. It's a great time to reach out to your member of Congress and ask them to please, please sign on as a co-sponsor to HR 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It costs you nothing to do it, and it means literally the world in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine as soon as you can. In the meantime, and even after, follow your protocols, wear your mask, double mask, don't touch your face, wash your hands, wear your nitrile gloves if you can. Use hand sanitizer a lot. Carry it with you wherever you go. Maintain your social distance, 15 feet between people wearing masks, and at least 15 nation states between you and someone who isn't. And of course, oh God, of course, if somebody comes towards you, beller in a minute, I'm going to have that Maxine Waters thrown out of Congress. Avoid that person like the plague. Because she is. It's mighty nice to be back. Thanks. Later.